Okay, so the plan is to be done by noon. Does anyone have any objections for that?
Let's get done by 11.
I like that added. Okay. All right. So, quick review. What we discussed yesterday and mechanics around your strategy. How do you feel about the four strategic goals in the order?
Very good.
Very good. Well, he doesn't want to get out of line. Over here. You guys good?
Yeah.
There? Not you. Yeah, really. All hips on you, Jenny.
Okay.
So, so we kind of talked about this. You like the alignment. You like the strategy of one attacks the other. You like the idea that it's going to be easy to communicate, and it's going to be easy for the executive staff, and everyone throughout the department can align to these four. Still feel good?
Okay. Check to make sure I put it in the right way. I may have tried to force it in.
Oh, great.
Force it in.
Leave it to a couple of big guys.
Yeah, we'll just stare at it.
$1,000 good idea.
Oh, boy.
Hold on one second. Hey, while we're pausing in the action, I just read.
I keep chasing UBS board up.
I'm warning you, just for you.
Okay, so let's. We talked about how the top and bottom were kind of the external view, and we did a little dreaming about what you'd like to increase, the movement that you'd like to make in the community. So you said you wanted to increase the size of the city and be very targeted. You wanted to increase kilowatts sold. You wanted to increase tourism, increase business diversity, and overall increase number of businesses.
What is that increase taken?
Kilowatt electricity.
Oh.
Kilowatt hours, is that what it is?
Yep.
So that those measures are really they're lagging, aren't they? And so as we move forward, I'll talk about the process, but what are the actions that you want to do that are going to lead to that those changes that you want? We clear there? God, this is a tough group this morning. All right, so let's go up to the top. So quality of place, we talked about we want to increase safety, we want to increase technology, increase infrastructure, increase business friendly, and increase citizen friendly. Make sense?
Yes, Dave.
There you go. I love this guy. All right. So just let that hang there, and let's switch gears. And so now let's look internal, and let's talk about fiscally sustainable. And so let's just have a general conversation of what that means to you in relationship to the other three, and then we'll go through the same process and say, okay, what do you want to maintain? What do you want to increase? What are the four or five key measures that you want on your dashboard to review quarterly with staff? So what does it mean to you all?
That you're not having to use your reserves to balance your budget on a consistent basis. Reserves are used there to be used
for true emergencies.
For true emergencies.
No, I was saying it sounds simple, but just live within your means. I mean, you've only got that's what you got to make work, so.
I like the federal government.
Well, I was thinking we need to get a special coin, the Mondale piece.
We'll put the better on the special coin, sir.
Don't tempt them.
Take it to the bank.
It's coming here.
Very good at it. Let's go sustainable. What does that mean?
I agree with both of them. But you have to be making enough money to sustain everything else that you want to do. That doesn't mean you can just stay still and hope that the things you're doing will continue to do that. You have to look for other avenues of revenue, potentially. How do you make yourself better?
Yeah, I just, you know, I kind of visualize those four gauges, and you see your reserves, you know, you see your ratios, you know what I mean? What's your revenue? Just really high level.
Well, and that's been, it's just not revenue. It's also, you know, watching what you're spending, cutting waste out of the government, and everything put together. Mm-hmm. It's physically sustainable.
Right.
I mean, also, I think small farms, especially government, one person loves, the next person may not love, but sustaining, what are your core services, what is it that you want to provide? Can't be everything to everybody. So you have to kind of work yourself down to core services. And then you start going to say, well, maybe that's not a core service. You get one person to the council, you know, sort of shut up for
I want a lawn bowl, and I really need it.
Three people to play shut up for it, and these 94 years old plays in our market, by God, if you don't get shut up for it, right? I mean, you're going to hear about it every council meeting in our market. It's awesome, but just trying to define core services and what it is if you can.
Well, and to that, I mean, I agree with everything everybody said, but there are only two core services that we have that no one else can do except us, is police and fire. I mean, everything else can be done by somebody else.
Okay, let's turn off all the lights in here and see what all the lights get turned on now.
Well, I mean, there's Progress Energy, there's FDNL, there's PICO, there's all those people that can do what the utility system does.
Well, they can do with the exception that we're locked in to FMPA via long-term contracts.
So. I'm just talking in generalities, but I mean, as far as core services, government can only do, provide police protection and fire. There's no one else that can do that. But yeah, utilities, yeah, you turn the lights off.
I think you got it for utilities in there. But you quit collecting the trash for a couple. We all know what happened when we went to one day instead of 2 days.
Well, there are other, you know, companies out there. I'm sure Waste Pro would love to collect our, you know, trash, and I'm sure the packers would love to collect our trash. But you know, the other thing too is, you know, we've explored like broadband and things like that. So like Councilman McCloud was saying about looking for other revenue sources, you know, from time to time there's opportunities come up, so you should look there. But you know, obviously, you gotta just kind of live in your age, do what you know. That's what Musk was talking about too. You know, not continually tapping into reserves. Well, we were at that point when I got a council in 1999. We had $500,000 in our reserves. We joked about through the military first. You know, got that.
How about the ladies down here? What does fiscal sustainability mean to you guys?
I think everything that Ellen said is, and you know, spending on is what we have, but then at the same time, I think it is important for us to, you know, there are so many capital projects, so we can't spend all the revenue, and we also need to be pretty tough side, you know, and, you know, make sure that our reserve stays where it is, make sure that we're pretty much tied for those capital projects that we don't want to do, you know, so it's not, I mean, for me, it's not just year to year only spending within our means, but spending within our means and also looking forward in the next few years and being able to put some aside for some help with what to be doing coming down the road.
Fiscally sustainable. ability. What does it mean to you? So, anything else?
I would say it's consistent in expanding revenues without raising the tax rate. You do that by increasing the tax base, existing properties become more valuable, you get more vacant stuff being used, so we're collecting a higher tax rate, a higher base rate on it. And also, we're expanding our electrical services to where we're collecting more revenues from our electric utility.
It's really predictability, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I would argue that there's many things. It's not just police and fire, it's public works and garbage collection and electric utility. Because in reality, every single one of them, including police and fire, could go someplace else. I mean, I'm sure our county friends would love the word consolidation, but we want to hold our police and fire, our garbage collection, our public recs to a higher standard that they could ever give us here. So, I mean, so it's more than just a couple of things there.
I agree with that 100%.
So as we begin to identify the measures, this becomes a tool that you use in your decision making. And you can challenge each other and catch each other. Because, you get emotionally attached to a project or a constituent comes in and says, you got to do the shuffleboards, right? And you step back and say, okay, is that going to make us less fiscally responsible? Is it going to have a negative impact on our associated measures there? And if so, you start having a different conversation. Because you see the impact here and the negative impact over here. So to kind of prime the conversation, I've asked staff to come up with some ideas for you to think about. Potential, 3 to 5, financial measures to consider and why. So I'll turn it over.
Just a couple of lines to come up with this. We talked a little bit yesterday about the percentage of residential and non-residential property values. Currently, we're at about 44% now of non-residential to residential. That's a pretty good measure that actually kind of falls into the what we talked about yesterday, first fine. That's one option. The other one is increase the revenues. If you look at the facility grants, there's a potential, maybe a more focus on grants. And one something that kind of ties into what we talked about yesterday about increasing the kilowatt hour sold would be as far as the other funds, public general fund, as far as that transfer. But I can kind of see a tie-in from that perspective. If you're increasing the revenues and you had some kind of formula that was based on revenues, you're driving the kilowatt hour sold, then you could filter that back into the general fund if it was some type of formula. So those are some some of the things that might be measurable and might tie into each other goals.
Other measures that I see often are just the broad bond rating. You see debt ratios. You see benefit costs. Just the average percent. You know what I mean, right?
Benefits
to salary. Thank you.
Ratio benefits
is a common one. FTE per capita is another one. That are kind of lie in the ball that you kind of think about where you want to be.
A couple other ones that just comes out there would be the expenditures to the population, the number of employees to the population. Those are common performance measures that are in local governments. How many employees do we have? There's certainly a population of about 56,000. So those are all performance measures that can be measured.
Yesterday you spoke about the part-time kind of thing and understanding the laws and the health care and get all that, but at the end of the day, your average pension contribution is what for a
42%.
42%. So regardless of what happens with health care, you know, there's still a big chunk there. And it's really interesting because I see in government a much more emphasis on the part-time staff, you know, seasonal. I have a tax collector that I work with, and he's up to almost 35% of his staff is part-time, and a lot of it is just very seasonal, you know. And the folks that work part-time, they love it. You know, it's a good part-time job. You know, they didn't want to work, you know, with us, you know, a waitress or a Home Depot, but this is a nice job. They can come in at 6 o'clock, 6:30, work for a few hours and get paid a decent living. I have another client, a clerk of court, and all you've heard in the last couple of years, the clerk of courts have just got hammered by the state on their budget, and it forced them to have some of these conversations. And they're up to about 15% in part-time in this one. It's actually Sarasota. And it's kind of interesting. They have a second shift that works from 6 to 9. And so kind of think of the model. So during the day, they have really good customer service reps. And all those transactional stuff that you got to do behind the scenes, that occurs at the night shift. So the day shift focuses entirely on, you know, great customer service, right? And then when they come to work, in the past, their inbox was like this, right? Now they come to work and their inbox is done. You know, it's a fresh day. And what they're doing is for the one FTE, they're getting three part-timers. The production is dramatically improved and it's still cheaper. So it really is an opportunity to begin thinking about some of these regular transactional stuff that, you know, very narrowly focused. And the other thing that I've learned on the part-time stuff, it doesn't work well during the day. It's really the second shift, because you're not going to get the same quality of folks. You want high-quality folks that are looking for a nice part-time to work in the evening for a few hours, a few days a week. Okay, so Janine, I'm going to steal you. Hey, no passing. Come on. What are you doing? Yeah. Yeah. By the way, where's the popcorn?
We ate it on. I thought I had a full house. And now that this one was just a little bit of a
lot. So let's do the same thing. Just use it in terms of increase, decrease, maintain, and don't overthink it, but relative to fiscal sustainability, what would you like to see tracked? So yell it out.
False outflow, okay. Number of operating days of cash on hand.
Excellent. Another one.
You want to increase or decrease?
Well, hopefully you have a target. That increase is felt pleasure.
So this is kind of the reserve issue.
Yeah.
And that's a good measure because it goes to when you think of what your budget's going to be like in 5 years, this has got to what? It's got to grow proportionally.
I would like to decrease debt without dipping into reserves.
And do you want to segment some of that debt? Do you like general fund debt, utility debt, or just overall city debt?
You have to start someplace.
Just say,
you know, and begin the process of, you know, I'm not sure if you'll ever be including debt-free city, but that's got to be somewhat
old. So decrease debt ratio. Okay. And it's like that. There's some target that you want to get to.
Sure. Sure. Well, zero is a target, but you may never get there.
Yeah. What else?
I will mention right now we are on a strategy map measuring our bond rating. We are measuring FTE per 1,000 residents and those things that Dave mentioned. We do have those on there right now.
Yeah. When do you have this available for us?
We present those to you quarterly, but you can have them at any time because we track them monthly.
And those are comparing apples to apples, so you compare us to another city with the electric utility and
yes,
the police force?
Yes, we are.
And also, general fund expenditures to 100,000 residents, ratio of benefits, total salary, general fund employees per 1,000 residents.
Thanks, sir.
Yes, sir.
What are FTEs per 1,000?
Full-time equivalents per 1,000 residents.
Okay.
I would be interested in that.
FTE per capita?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, one of the things that Matt said on yesterday about things follows the growth, keeping that on the forefront, you know, that measures whether or not we're actually doing that. You know, or are we growing as we grow, or are we...
The only problem with that, though, is...
No, that's per capita, though. Yeah.
The only problem with that, though, is it's not all cities are created equal, so...
Well, that's why I say we've got to compare apples to apples.
Right.
We can't compare us to a city that's not operating an electric utility.
That's right.
Or that's not having its own police force.
Many cities are begging communities to larger metropolitan areas,
yeah.
So they don't have the... So it's not... But it's one thing you look at, but...
Yeah. We're currently using the Florida Benchmarking Consortium's data. There are 48 municipalities that participate. And that's what we use. It's a collective data dump system annually. We can't pull comparative data for every single thing that we want to measure, but those kinds of things are pretty standard across municipalities, and then we can get that shortly. I'd be happy to go over that if you're interested.
Yeah. The other thing I see folks do relative to some of these is that the answer to that question. They say, okay, of all the cities in Florida, we want to compare ourselves to cities plus or minus 20,000. And of those, you know, you go from 5,000 cities down to a few hundred. Of those that have a police force and have the utilities, how do we look? You know, so it is kind of apples. But it begins with who do you want to compare to and what's fair?
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting, first was like the Minister of Florida League of Cities training for elected officials. And they did a thing, you know, how many cities have a police force? And how many cities have this, you know, raising my hand, utility, you know, electric, water, raising your hand, raising your hand. How many cities have a golf course, raising your hand? You know, we've got it all. It's very hard. You know, everybody's sitting there with their hands on it. Oh, God. You know, so it's... You're absolutely right. You know, you've got to compare to cities that really, I mean, we've got a full service city, basically, and it is very important to sort of have those comparisons.
Correct. And so what this does is just it's an indicator that says, as I grow, are my FTEs growing faster than that or some comparable ratio?
Well, I mean, I've got a good one we touched on yesterday. Is, we have to increase, you know, the amount of money we're spending for retirement benefits.
Do you want to limit it to only retirement or just say benefits?
I'm more than happy to throw in the benefits, but I mean, the retirement benefits is what we really impact right now.
I mean, that's
what we've been discussing.
That's the big one.
That's the big
one. And I think part of that, that goes into that, is that we need to have retirement benefits that are not growing exponentially.
But it's sustainable.
We have to be able to predict what those are going to be.
Yes.
Years down the road and be able to do that accurately.
So,
have an accurate number for years in the future of what we have that's going to be.
We need to come up with what that number is. I know what we're doing now is not sustainable. We really haven't come up with the number that is. I mean, it's kind of hit or miss. I mean, I know that we know that the property taxes are going down, the revenues from that, you know, and if the tax is equal to what the pension contribution was, almost, yeah, pretty close. So whatever number that is sustainable, and design a plan around whatever that number is.
What's the current measure that your kids?
Ratio of benefits to salary. Is that right? correct, Sean?
Because you have benefits to close out.
Can we start there in parentheses, pension, healthcare? Because then you can start slicing it. Because then you're creating a strategy and you're saying, okay, here's our target. So now as you go out and you look at benefits and negotiations, you've got an area where you want to play. And to create that business model, it says if I push here, what happens over here?
Do we know what that ratio is right now?
63%.
So for every dollar of selling, you're getting 63%.
Yeah.
What do you think an average city is?
Probably below 40%.
What about an average employer?
What do you think it is on by itself?
What percentage? But that's the thing where we're sitting here saying, what is the number can we sustain? I mean, we're sitting here now with the number that was picked. You know, and it's turned out not to be the right one. Right. So we're going to pick another one. So how do we know that in 20 years of the council sitting here, really picked that number back then? That's where we're trying to get it.
There is one way.
There's probably can in the backyard, you know, buried. Outstanding, but it's hard to get to that where you start to look and say, listen, it's only your job, and you get into more of the word out there, you know, define contribution, you know, versus here's what we can guarantee you, because we're sitting right here and we can't, you're not being able to guarantee anything. And that's the frustration part on everybody's call is, if you know what the number was picked at, you know what everybody's going to assume, and everybody's been working on that, and all of a sudden we're sitting here, and obviously that number that got picked wasn't good. So we gotta scale it back. But who even knows? That's just the whole thing. I mean, predicting a number where in 2040 you'll be able to receive boom, 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 boom. You just
move on. Well, you think about it, you know, governments tend to lag business best practices, you know, good 10 years, maybe 15. And so in the private sector, do any of them have defined benefits anymore?
Yes.
But it's going down.
It's still going down. 13% still
down. It's still down. So it's really dropped. And there could be a trend in the future where governments move to from a defined to a 401 model.
But I mean, people have in the private sector quite a bit of this for a different reason. I mean, the owners want to get as much money as they can possibly get into the plan for them. It was one of the reasons they had it. But you know, like what Daniel was saying, you're absolutely right. We have to go, we know that what we've got is not sustainable. But you know, where's that? I mean, we can take that benefit and say, whatever it takes to get there, that's what we're going to do, whatever that number is. Now we're talking about picking a defined, you know, contribution number. We really don't know what, if that's sustainable, but you know, I guess, you know, down the road you can amend the plan and change the, you know, contribution level. But the benefits can be whatever the benefit's gonna be. We don't know what that's gonna be. Yeah. So that's why I keep bringing that up, and we're just looking at it, you know, a couple of different ways, but you know, we know that what we're doing now is not working.
Dave, what's best practice in dealing with
the benefits?
Yes. Do you know?
They're all over. I mean, they're all over. You see some cities and counties that are doing some pretty targeted strategic outsourcing to impact this. But I don't really see any big movement right now where cities and counties are going to 4-1 and moving away from defined benefits. There's been some cities as part of a negotiation tool that threatened that, but they've all backed away.
Well, I would say this. 401k is not necessarily, or defined contribution is not necessarily the magical answer to everything.
Right.
Defined benefit that is defined correctly is just as effective and just as sustainable. In the end, it gives you that ability to look out in the future. You can always change. Yeah. And that's the beauty of being in the city of Ocala.
Right.
We can change. We don't have to wait on Tallahassee here.
Right.
You know, cross town, the county commission tells us what to do.
Okay, a couple other measures. What are you thinking? A simple one, or a couple of simple ones that folks tend to track as a leading, and it's really the budget number, you know, percent to budget to actual. So yeah, variances. So if you look at it, you see more. You know, everyone does the revenue. So if you could write percent budget variance expense. And what you're seeing on the other side is paying a lot more attention on the projected revenue side. Because you can go to a budget and say, we're going to get $1 million, right? But the second it's coming in at $500,000, your whole budget has changed. You know, so you can be spending the expenses right on target, but from a balance sheet perspective, you got problems. So percent budget variance revenue.
Are we looking, say, to where we want to cut things, or we also want to increase? Or is this both?
These two tend to be just barometers. You're monitoring your budget that you've adopted.
Right.
These are more long-term strategies of where you want to have incremental changes over a number of years. Now, your question, restated.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, are you looking for a simple answer, like, for instance, I'd like to see more money spent on the downtown, or I'd like to see less money spent on the downtown. But is that what we're looking for?
I'm just throwing it right back to you. It's what you want. So relative to fiscal sustainability, what does that look like? And so... one that you mentioned, and it may have gone pretty quick, was the percent ad valorem residential versus business. Follow me? Mm-hmm. So you may say in 4 years, we want to change that a little bit. So can we add that one just for conversation?
Sure.
So recite the measure again, would you? What's the proper name of the measure?
Non-residential value is percent of total taxable value.
Simplify it.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff up there, but I mean, basically what you're talking about is,
yeah, sorry,
having enough cash on hand, like, you know, got some months to not have to use that on a continual basis, provide the core services that you need to provide, and have enough money to do it. I mean, those three things are, that's financial sustainability. Whatever services that is, and whatever, you know, but.
If you drive number one up, it's because you're doing all the other things within there.
Exactly.
But you could also argue, you gotta do all the other things, or you're not gonna drive number one up.
Yeah, like the one we were talking
like
about.
Like what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's.
Just a question. Just to check the non-residential value. Do you put on that piece of the non-residential value percentage is currently 44%? Go back and see yesterday the strategic plan and our foundation. Economic development. A little bit of a blend in here in this, it seems like to me, all very well, you know, sidewalks and this and that, but I would say caring toward residents would sound like a great thing to do, but tying back into a foundation, an economic hub, non-residential value percentage, I mean, that's what we're trying to create, and does the rest of that start falling in on that number of years, you know? Because all those things affect everything, affect when that number goes up or down.
Put another way, if you're successful on economic hub, that percentage should go what? Down, right?
That's going to go up.
Oh, excuse me.
I'm saying that number
trust a business.
That line item goes up to the top. If you're tied in to economic hub, where we're not trying to become the residential hub,
right?
We're trying to become the economic hub of Marion County, because with all due respect, we don't want to become villages. We don't want to become on top of the world. We want to be, you know, we want to fill up back. We want to fill up the airport. We want to fill up every shopping center. If we want to do that, then we, yes, we're always going to have residents. We've got our subdivisions, all that. You know, we'll always have that. But as long as we are the, again, going right back to that hub, McAllen has a reason to exist. We, you know, I wonder when Dale's time to start looking for what I'm going to these little, you know, because we've all heard the law. Now, we've heard, you know, Bobita, it's just like, gosh, you're so careful to end up that, because as soon as you got married, and I don't remember saying the name, I was one of the least things. You know, at the end of the questions, we're the only one standing there. We got it all. And all of a sudden, it's like, you realize that that's a pretty good thing. Because a lot of these people, they don't have any apartment. There's some cities that have really don't even have parks. Because they may have one little strip of grass, and that's all they've got to maintain, so it's easy to do it. They've got, you know, six-person police force, and they've got so they're not going in to just drive through the community, everybody get down into Orlando, down to those things. And so, you know, again, if all those things are, you know, increased number of businesses, so that number starts to go up. Increased business diversity, that number starts to go up. Increased tourism doesn't really kill us, so that can be a byproduct of increasing non-residential value in the size of the city. But I just, you know, wouldn't it be great to sit here next year and that number is at 53%?
So this is really a lagging measure if economic health goal is successful.
Yeah, I just,
and if this goes out,
that's coming out. All of a sudden, we've got a lot of work to do because, you know, we're dreaming big, but proof's in the pudding that we're not there yet. It seems to me that number ought to be on the other side of at least 50%. If you're trying to become that.
With cool eyes, going to be able to sell the one up, it increases your operating cash, they crash on it.
What's an interesting thing to me, though, all that is correct, but when you talk about core services, economic health is not necessarily core service. When you think about having the most efficient, the most effective fire and police, and just think about fire and police, having the best fire and police, certainly having great safety is something that businesses are interested in, but it is not a driving force. Whether or not this kind of business in Ocala. It's an interesting dichotomy to think about that the foundation is economic development. It is the thing that will address all these issues, yet it's not necessarily a core service. Not every government really is that active in becoming an economic hub.
Yeah, and I was just using that as far as those are the only two things that the private sector can't do that we do. I mean, nobody else can be monster. About that service in government. You're right. I mean, it's not core service in what you can say, but people aren't going to, you know, move to a community of business where they are employees. You know, they don't feel, you know, that they're safe. And I've got a problem with people coming downtown because they don't feel safe because they're around the Salvation Army. And I have to tell them not coming there. I don't think it's safe. So
for the employees, sometimes that's this difficult disconnect.
Well, and that's more from the film that it's still, I think, we have to be so careful. But your comments, you know, things just work. You know, little Ocala, sleepy Ocala 30 years ago worked fine. Why do you got to go change it now? Because that mentality. You get run over and we will absolutely just fall right into there. I mean, we won't exist. People won't believe it. There's too many examples. And the other thing, you know, I think the flip side of that, because we're talking about, I think the word base camp got set yesterday, and we're talking about tourism and all that, you know, this space camp. And go back again to, well, look at our friends over at the county. They don't have a base camp. They float around in vehicles and offices and everything. that's, you know, that's the other reason why we do have some good things that we are, and that's why we have to stay vigilant in all of this, because they want, they know that the minute they get it, and they do have a place to call home, they do have a place where they can operate, they do have a place where they can go out and tell them, win elections and take care of all the people in the forest, and the people in Delta, people in Delta, and all of these things, all of these, you know, talking about drive elections, they just simply do. So they got the base camp, which they leverage off like to do with, you know, ambulance service, you know, we're cash flow. Any types of things that we do in the city or the county does, we're a cash flow generator for them because of the density of populations and all these things. Then we've become just a leverage to run the county. And that's, again, going back to that. So city council through elections, its citizens and everything, that's, I guess, that part of your time. You want citizens to go get to live in the city of Cal. At the same time, how do you get employees? But getting that message that we have to be absolutely vigilant in maintaining the lead in this county, that we are the center of the universe, which this county operates, and we got to stay out ahead of it where we can have all of those parts and everything and going and just circling the wagons and saying, just let the rest of that, you know, go away. We can't be,
right.
We can't be self-sufficient totally. We have to depend on some other things. So I just, I'm going to see like a goal for next year, you know, whoever's sitting here, that staff comes back and says that 44% number is now, I don't know, what's a reasonable goal? Is it 46? Is it 47? Is it 50? Is it, you know, raise it 3 percentage points? I don't know.
Daniel, Mark, your comments provoked a lot of thoughts. Let me try to share a couple with you. And that's this. Cities do not exist without taxes. Taxes aren't collected without businesses. And so, in essence, investment in economic hub is an investment in our core services. Much in the same way, an investment in economic development is an investment in our employees that we discussed yesterday. There's that symbiotic relationship that's got to happen. You don't have that financial basis, you don't have much of anything.
And I don't know if the residents appreciate that, because every time this goes up, what's the positive impact for the residential ad valorem? It's less of their share of the pie.
But as that goes down, and as residents insist on maintaining this full-service government and all these services, then your only option is taxes have to go up.
Right. Exactly.
And so then it goes back to the strategy of business diversity, increase the number of businesses, increase utility. So what are the four top ones? Let's do that. What's one we can all agree upon? But yep, that's what we want to look at each quarter. Top and bottom?
Yeah. Cash on hand, that's obviously number one. So,
how many days of points?
And what?
The bottom.
What? Bottom one? Okay. And we had a lot of conversations around this, right?
Yeah.
Benefits?
Yeah.
It's a long-term fiscal strategy, right?
That's a large portion of that.
Right? Is there one more?
So I think if we do the other things, you're just going to impact those three things, right?
Yeah, the other ones fall in place.
Yeah.
Or at least move according to what's going on with the others.
Yeah. So you just want to go with three?
Yeah.
That's those other three are really action plans.
Yeah, it really is, because then from your chief operating officer, he's got to be watching this, because if this gets out of control, it's going to what?
That's got to lower that.
So that's really something he's going to be looking at, how he runs the shop. Okay. Any other conversations? Okay, let's take a 10-minute break, get some fresh coffee, and then we'll go on to operational excellence.
Thank you.
How do I do that? On your list?
Just right there on my computer. So if you hit the
scale. How much you can set, Vincent?
Yeah, very good, thank you. I'm going to be very well, I'm going to bring it up in very general terms, and then if they drill down, we'll know, but I'll try to.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, in the future,
how you doing, Larry? Good. I talked to Jeff Malcolm this morning about Florida Northern is in the process of condemning a portion of private property for the rail spur from Magna, which has always been part of the tripartite agreement. But they've asked, in terms of settling that kind of thing, to come over to you.
Mayor.
Yeah.
I can put a clarification in on that.
I would be very happy.
Yes, okay, I'll do that when I get back today. Because you get down here quickly.
Because the guy that does it is actually retired. He used to be a volunteer. We don't have those.
I talked to the old police, the former police chief, and later when I asked my notes. And you see him pulling his sweater out of the car. Yeah, that's the first I've seen him, you know. He looks great. He's down, and yeah, he's dressed in. And
what's your town? Yeah. Good. Keep busy, you know. Yeah. Just keep busy,
you
know. Yeah.
Which
he did
before.
Yeah.
Mr.
Logan,
I was
trying to pay down debt today. Yeah. Good. Yeah, I thought it was. Well, and I think there'll be an opportunity to next 5 years to
increase your supplies on hand and pay that debt down on top of what you're already paying.
Are there actually cities out there that are, I guess, there would be a little bit.
I mean,
most of ours is just big projects and big roads and stuff.
Money's not a problem.
force for like money.
Or do you like to get up here?
That's something to have a state as a whole.
But then it's right.
Yeah.
Example, but what do they have to do well from their internal perspective that results in quality of place? Follow my logic?
Sure.
And so this afternoon I'm going to work with staff, and so if can I use you as a prop? Come on up here, brother. So as he faces the elected officials, he says, okay, this is the dashboard. Now he's going to take that this afternoon. We're going to turn around to the organization, and we're going to challenge each of the departments to give us two or three operational measures that demonstrate organizational excellence. You know what I mean? So it could be things like time of repairs, turnaround time, response time, or accuracy of water, or, you know, all those kinds of things that you got to do. The public never sees, right? That's so it's like in healthcare, you know, like, you know, I tell a story, you know, in healthcare, the number one thing patients want is what?
Get out.
Someone who's had a hip surgery, you want pain control. You want to feel better. Okay. Now, that's their only barometer, isn't it? Okay. Now, behind the scenes, there's a whole science of what the nurses do to reduce the pain, right? That's the analogy. The external quality of places, they just want to know, I feel safe. you know, it's business friendly, it's the perspective, you know what I mean? But there's a whole these mechanics that got to go on behind the scenes, and that's the other dashboard that he's going to be working with staff on. Does that make sense? But as he looks this way, he's got, how many departments you have?
A lot.
I think, yeah, like 15.
Yeah.
So imagine 15 times 2. So he's got 30 operational measures, right? You with me? What are 4 or 5 operational measures that you would like to view on a regular basis? You see where I'm going? Thank you.
You got it.
Well, you're talking about operational excellence to what customers see or citizens see and don't see. I mean, if we get some letters thanking us for your sanitation work that did so-and-so, you know, it was a pothole, it was repaired, you know, my water didn't work or the pressure was low and your staff came out and fixed it and did all these things. You get those letters all the time, you know, and almost like you can be happy. I mean, that's a kind of measure, but then we're talking about that and measuring it, you know, as far as rewarding employees and, you know, complimenting employees. But I'll give you an example of just real quick. I sat down at a lunch one day and somebody was complaining about a pothole with residents. I said, oh, I'll see if I can fix it. Give me your address. I called Public Works and they said, yeah, we'll check on it. Called me back and said, they called me back when dessert came and told me, mayor or councilman, they lived about a block outside the city, but we went ahead and fixed the pothole anyway. And they were sitting across the street from, I mean, across the table from me. I said, oh yeah. I said, they fixed the pothole, so when you go home this afternoon, it's fixed, but you don't live inside the city, but we just did it anyway. I said, really? I said, yeah, this is what we did. And that was in like 45 minutes we did that. From the time I called them, it was done. I guarantee you there's probably another city in the country that would do that. You know, the service that those people provide is, you know, it's unbelievable. And I'm sure that Susie, I know when you got on council and Jay and John, I mean, you never realize what actually has to happen when you turn your water on board to actually make that work, or when you flip that light switch, all the work and all the people that have to, you know, work to make that electricity come on. It's a lot more that goes on to the public knows about, or that garbage picked up. There's a lot of things that have to happen for that to happen. A couple.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, going back,
I don't know,
can you stand
over
here?
Well, you got
trolling
there.
You get to. As we start, and I go back, we'll sit here for, you know, yesterday morning. If we as a council are going to sit here and we're going to agree on economic health, that's our kind of the fulcrum, right? So all of this is going to start spending, has been, and continues. So the economic gets to the, you know, business. So now we're sitting here and we're talking about operational excellence. And so we're sitting here, and so just as you said, Matt's listening to this tape. Now he's got all of this force behind him. One thing that I think, and we talked about it yesterday, that I think John just started with, you know, you people at the city, you're there all the time. You know, people sitting there, do what you want to do, when you want to do it, and you know, we just don't, we don't care. One of the operational excellence things, I do it for making my own business. So I get in manufacturing water tanks for fire trucks. Get a guy down inside a tank with wells and wells and wells and wells and wells and wells, and that's all he does. That's all he does. That's all he does. Uh-oh, God, it's all. It's renowned that you take those guys out of that tank, out of that just sitting there, and you take them to a show. So you see that tank going into a fire truck, and that fire truck's going to go to the community. Community is going to be served with that fire truck. So what they do matters, what it means. And so operational excellence almost becomes, and that is what we talk about, I think, program, is almost the first thing is an awareness of that first goal, that economic health. So it's as we're sitting here, I look at you got all these, you know, 800 employees behind you, and you're sitting here, awareness that it's not just as the employees are kind of looking over his shoulder and sitting here saying, what does council want to do now? We also can turn and face this way in the sense that we're just in the line, too. We have citizens.
You have the public over there.
Yeah, there's citizens, but it's a little bit unique, just we talked about, some citizens, all they want, just fix the bottom line, it's good, you know. But it's more than that, so at this table, it's a little bit of, yes, we want to be here for you to help you with those problems. We want to help you, you know, parks and all these other things, but it's also a little bit, so it's not just us, this is all one big progression of, we're not just sitting in some room, as I always talk about, you know, chiseling out the tablets and then, you know, go forth and do good things kind of deal. And all this ebb and flow of a lot of things, so the job of Matt as a turnaround is just, listen, we're asking to fix potholes, we're asking to fix, but there's an awareness going back to an economic development, where we fit in this community, what we're going to do and what our existence is going to be. And so it's not just, hey, be operationally excellent and give us a quality of place and be physically sustainable. Just come back, understand who we are, what we're doing, and where we're headed. And just, I'd almost prefer just becomes awareness.
Let me give you an example to tie that. Stay right there. Right? You're just a great prop. You're not a bucket, but you're a great prop. So let's stay with the business team. So an operational excellency is, the customer say, I need consistent turnaround on my DRG or my business permit, right? So the operational excellence measure could be, 99% of the business permits are completed within X days, right? That's a great measure. You see the alignment here? So now let's look at the infrastructure. What's a good measure? X percent of public works, work orders are completed the same day or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see where you're sitting, you're hitting a community that sees it, and you see the business community.
Right.
So if I do my permits really quickly, and then I go all the way up to the top, and I do the business friendly. So now I did the business permit in one day, and then I've got a kiosk here, and I say, you know, would you mind just taking a one-question survey? So now I've got customer feedback. Did they like it? So the process is they don't care all the technology and the electronic, right? They just want the permit done in one day. You see where my alignment here is?
Doesn't that fall down? So we're up, we're down, we're operational excellence. So Matt is seeing that, you know, business permits are done in one day, then you start working back down with them, going back towards the goal. So all of a sudden, Ocala is not only operational excellence, but, you know, look at the non-residential value of the center, start talking about that. So we're able to crank them out. Is that number, which we hope that become 44, becomes 47, becomes 49.
Exactly.
You're going down to increase the number of businesses, and it gets back, and you get right back down to the bottom on awareness, all the way back, all the way down through the thing of we're an economic hub, we're making this happen. So this is why we're doing what we're doing. This is why we're trying to be physically sustainable. It's not just all those 800 people peering over his shoulder, wondering, what do the guys come up with now? They want us to do. Awareness of where we're at in this whole big food chain.
I'm going to say something, and this is 110% better than it was in the past. And that's due to Matt and his executive staff. But I would like to see, you know, when people call me, when a citizen calls me and says, hey, I got a problem, I call one of those guys to get stuff done kind of well. But some of the frustration with people in the community is, well, they call the city hall first, or they call so-and-so first, and this person didn't know who to, you get what I'm at?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see, in the future, we continue on this path that he's taking us down, whereas the first level takes care of the problem, gets it done, and for the most part, that does happen, but there are those incidents we're having, and Mayor, you've been here forever, so you understand.
Oh, I know exactly. Yeah, when it gets to the point where they're calling you, that's not good.
But
to fix it when they call,
and it's so much better now that it has. And you may never get to where it's perfect, but I really like the fact that we're getting better at that. I hope that we continue to do so.
Well, and let me, I'll tell you a quick story, but yeah, and sometimes they'll just call us and I'll say, have you called? Oh, well, no, I haven't called them yet. But, you know, they just call us.
Right.
But I'm going to give you a quick story. Dave Brandon sat in my office one day after when Rick Horst was here and said, boy, you need to get rid of that guy. You know, everybody hates him. I said, really? I said, why is that? So, well, he wants everybody to do everything, do it quick, this, that, and the other. And, you know, and I said, well, yeah. And he said, you know, he said, when Paul was here, you know, Paul would always call over and he was all excited. Hey, you know, council, you know, wants something done and, you know, we need to hurry up and get this done. And, you know, he said, I would tell Paul, hey, just, you know, calm down. We'll get to it. Don't worry about it. And I said, and so, well, Dave, I said, when council asks for you to do something, I said, it's not us asking. It's a citizen asking, telling us, and we're telling Paul, you know, to do it, or asking him, you know, to get you guys to do it. I said, you know, there just was no sense of urgency there. I said, had there been a sense of urgency, I said, you know, Paul might still be here. I don't know. But it was just that lackadaisical attitude of council, we'll just get to it whenever.
Yeah, I have to say, I will mention it again. In my first 90 days of being a council member in 2001, I was told by a staff member, council's come and go, the staff will always be here, so face yourself.
Well, okay. it's almost unfair to even compare it to past, because it's so vastly different today.
Well,
all I'm saying is, you know, as good as it is, it can even be better.
Right.
And again, so that goes back to training.
Go sit in there, and the folks in there would love for you to show up, put a headset on, field calls for 5 hours.
Yeah.
Just get familiar with it, because it is 100% based. I mean, everything can always be tweaked, but I can tell you, if you go in there, because I know we went out there to Utah, with everything that we just set up out there, just, I'm sure they'd love that. I mean, so they're going to headset on, just sit there and put it on, you start seeing where you got hired on the call. You can see that there is a system, and it is working. Everything always gets tweaked, but it goes about what you say a lot. We still, I don't know how you drive it into citizens, look at what call, you know, and that's where we get into that 16-9 city. So their frustration ends up, they're just not knowing how to call, and I don't know, you know, you plaster it on their bill, you plaster it, because we do have a process. It's just a matter of people, I don't know.
So, now, I think before maybe, like, I would get our, some of my answers to our website, so then you got to figure out, okay, this is perfect, you know, people are going through that, so it's so much easier just to call your, you know, your elected counselors,
exactly.
Call, you know, click their name, I'll get their number, call them, or email them, whatever, and so then that kind of cuts through, you know, the me having to figure out where to call. I think the 69 City does a lot of that.
Well, it's fun going there.
I would like to see this on that, being able to text 69 City, you know, the other kind of social media way that being text, just for those things, through the pothole. I do that. Like, if I'm driving around and see a pothole, I tell my kids, call 69 City, I call it in, you know, because I know they've got some sort of standard, which we want to, I mean, I need to measure that of the time of when those get checked.
You do have Facebook.
Yeah, but, I, you know, just so many people are texting, and it's, that's so much.
There's cool apps out there now that cities are using too.
Yeah.
And you can do the app and you can take the picture and then send.
Right.
When you start getting into this thing, operational license, this just, I don't know how much council can provide other than cheering people on, really, because I mean, this gets into the place, you know, nuts and bolts and things.
And I'll give you a really easy one. You ready? Let's just get targeted. So, to be business friendly,
what is NAF operation got to do? What's one or two things that, that he's really got to do well to be business friendly?
Sense of urgency.
Timeliness?
Yeah, and just, and I know we in government, you know, create a lot of red tape and paperwork and just, you know, there's just so much to that. I mean, to somehow instill in the people that are up front or that deal with citizens to just cut through that minutia and just that red tape and just focus on somebody walked in my office, this man's trying to build a building, to open a business, get him through her through all that stuff and just focus on it.
So if we want to increase businesses.
Increase response times.
For what?
For
permitting?
For departments. I mean, yeah. Every department defines that.
But from a, if I'm going to open a business, I don't care if it's 10 departments or 40 departments, I just, when am I going to get my permit from?
Right.
So can we, just as a placeholder, permit timeliness? Can we start there?
I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Okay. And so because if I'm guessing that businesses come in and they say, how long is your DRG take? Or how long is your, you know what I mean, your permit, right?
Right.
They do.
How long is it?
A permit to build or a permit to occupational?
I think we can look at both. We could look at
it is
many more businesses are opening up in an existing
right
site rather than building.
There is no doubt in the permit process, and remember, this is a very big spec permit. I realize we're at 30,000 feet. When you say permit, you're referring to everything. You're referring to the individual who literally just wants to re-roof his garage, to the person that's completely doing a new development of a shopping center on the developing's property. So from a public perspective, a permit covers all of developing a subdivision. The reality is there's many gradations of what a permit equates to. The complicating factor, in my opinion, is that the design professionals that are involved in the permit process all have varying degrees of knowledge and skill when it comes to local requirements. And that's really on the land development side for us. So if you're going to pull a contractor who's going to do a re-roof or a building addition, most of those people understand the Florida Building Code. They pass those, they have those certifications. And those are not usually the biggest issues, although we get some of those issues. And usually it's the owner that doesn't understand any of that, that just wants the permit today. I applied for it this morning. Why don't I have it after lunch? But the land development side becomes much more complicated. Out of town engineers, for example, that understand our local regulations, we may go through a resubmittal process with them three or four times in the site plan process because they don't have a price.
You get them where they need to be.
Yeah, so now we continue to do things to try to help them with that. We could do more there. We could have more training, for example. Our project docs program we talked about yesterday is a means to try to make that process more efficient and save money. So I think there are things we can continue to work on. I will tell you one of the things that Ocala does, in my opinion, better than many jurisdictions, because I've permitted projects on the private sector for many other jurisdictions, is, and not everyone always takes advantage of this, is we are willing to bring early on, before you even submit plans, before you even hire an architect to do the plans or an engineer, we're always willing and ready to sit down with high-level people, our city engineer, our planning official, our building official, and go through the project and identify early on, here's the potential problem, and most importantly, here's potential solutions. You don't get that from any other jurisdiction. You permit through Orlando, you'll get a denial, and you won't even know why. So I just want to make sure everyone understands it's, that is a good goal.
But where I want to take you is a very surgical and targeted measure. So in other words, if we want to increase businesses and we want to increase diversity, I'm there. Okay, so not the roof. I'm there. What do we got to do, operational excellence, that facilitates that process? I mean, so it's not all permits. It's a measure of targeted. It could be land development, it could be occupational license, because you want to spend both of those, right? So you may say, well, just, you know, occupational license, you know, percent done, X days. Then the broader, more complicated one.
That requires state permitting and other things.
Yeah, but you see what we're trying to connect here? It's got to be, you got to tell Matt, say, look, if for us to increase the businesses, here's what we got to excel at operational wise.
Yes.
It can't be this, I'm bumping up against.
Yes. Well, and like you said, you know, Mark, I mean, people don't understand why, you know, a lot of that, you know, happens. But they need to be able to better communicate with them, look, you know, we're denying this or whatever because of so-and-so. Now, you know, there are alternatives. We could do this. We could go back to, you know, council and, you know, maybe change the code or whatever. Maybe the easier your list of alternatives, we'll help you out when we can get you to where you need to be.
Sure.
But here's why, and here's what we need to do. So they go, okay, now I get it. You know, you're just not telling me no.
Real quick, for case studies, so let's talk about this economic hub and this good stuff. We're going to increase the number of businesses, we're going to increase kilowatts, so we're going to want to be home and everything. That, so let's take that. We can, like we just went through, and I want to be sensitive as we go through, we sit here today and we think, good, you're putting up permanent time of steps, you know, Matt, Mark, just freaking go, just do it, all right? And be careful up here from a counting standpoint of what it is we're asking, because let's take economic hub and increase the number of business and actions, and let's go over there and put racetrack. Stay road 200, back and forth, and the situation that staff gets put in, all right? This is where I've said, you know, and everybody just listened to me on council, yeah, there's a whole drawn out thing of what color the damn, you know, cover is going to be. There is no code, there is no rule, there is no thing that says it shall be pink, it shall be red, it shall be blue. Right? Yet you get three or four citizens to come in, and they don't even want the racetrack there in the first place. So all of a sudden, we're up here, we're excited at council, we're going to increase the number of businesses, we're going to have a racetrack out there, so we're going to have Larry to plug in immediately. We're going to have all these exciting things, and our 44% now goes up to 44.2% because now we've got this new business. And yet we end up in a council meeting, and everybody's, you know, bitching and moaning because we don't, you know, call in and try to 200, you know, foot.
You know, anyway, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's a great example. Well, all of a sudden, staff's over here. Council wants me to be timely in my thing. I got juggalo citizens over here. Says he'll be damned if he's gonna have, you know, this gas station. You know, of course, he lives, you know, closer to the deli of Publix than he does this break. He's complaining that's gonna, you know, encroach on us. Yet when you look at the area, I mean, lives right in the back door of Publix, but he's complaining about the racetrack too close to it. So it's good to public, but we don't want the racetrack gas station there. But that's a great example that all of a sudden it is timing us. It ends up in the council meeting, and you've got the folks from racetrack saying, you know, there's nothing in your code that says it has to be red, and your county has to be red. So staff's put in this position of, you're talking about your remarks, so they submit their plans, right? And here's our plan, this is your code, because there are folks, when a racetrack or anybody comes in, they hire a Joe London, or they hire any of these guys, or any of them. They know the code, that's why they hire these guys. So Joe London knows, like, in fact, he probably knows it better than we do. We know what the city can do, what we can't do. So it's submitted, it goes in, and then all of a sudden there's this, we're trying to please everybody, okay? And then it does end up in a council meeting, and so we sit there for 2 hours. And, well, you know, I mean, it's so my point is we gotta be careful, or at least from council you gotta set some of these architectural standards or what, you know, you can get down into micromanagement of it. But the permitting process had become timeless. We can't just sit up here and think all is good when we've got 59, almost 6,000 ordinances in the city of Ocala that we've got, and think that everything's okay, because sometimes this ordinance conflicts with this ordinance, that conflicts with this ordinance, that conflicts with this ordinance, because we said it one time, because we were sitting here, we had a problem with sidewalks. So, quick, let's do an ordinance that says, you know, your sidewalk's going to be blah, 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 blah. Well, there's a light. So, if somebody comes in, and you're trying to piece this big puzzle, it's all going together, there's no way to be timely. Because we reacted and reacted and reacted and reacted and reacted. So now we're, and I think it's getting a lot better. The staff gets put in position. So I'm going to sit here and tell everybody, y'all go be timely. Yeah, and I can tell you the first thing to get the meeting. Well, do the freaking chiselers of the commandments know that they've chiseled 97 commandments, you know, 47 of them don't know? Like, you know, go tell those people, $200 a month, y'all, who said, you know, what they want doesn't work. that's where staff's got to come back to us, and that's where agenda items got to be done, and says, you know, ordinance number three conflicts with ordinance number seven, so if you want us to be timely, we can, so which, you know, which one is the balance, which one's the one? So we don't end up, and you go to the other time list, and I think the Three Straight Gas Station, and the mess that we're going through with the car dealership, Phil's up there on 441.
Oh, yeah.
We're excited, and we've increased the number of businesses, we've increased kilowatts, we're increasing the non-residence value, we've got all these things, and yet it's, we got this resident who doesn't even fill the city limit, you know, doing jobs, and all of a sudden he's getting watershed off his property, and we're just in a, we're in a fix here. Bad diligence being involved, and we're burning money, lawyers, this and that, and staff time and everything else, so I would hope that as we move forward on this permanent time list, that staff comes back, and these things get on agenda items, to say, we've got to fix some of the scene, if you want to make decisions, and you're going to make a time list, you know, say from here, gas station shall be red, or, well, yeah, it's just whatever, and if they're going to be, that's what it is, so then staff can be timely.
Right.
Because, you end up in council meetings, I know, and burn 5 hours talking about a color of a post.
Well, I think our staff.
Okay, still have me as hand.
I'm sorry, John, no, go ahead.
Real quick, he's right. Having someone to walk somebody through the process and help them, that's one answer to the problem. And the more information that we can give them, the more that we can help them. They don't understand. Joe Blow that's trying to open a restaurant has no clue when he walks in that door. The more we can help him, the more time it can be. I think maybe go back and take another view of the whole process and see what's in there that maybe should be. That's got some over the years.
That conversation. I'm a chart guy, so the second that you have your data and you say, let's say Elk is good, and I want a target up here, then you start having that conversation. What do we got to fix, right, to get us there? So we need more communication, we need more this, you know. But it's not until you have the measure of the target that suddenly you start saying, maybe we need to reinvent it, or what are all these possibilities? But only begins when you have a measure and a target. This, you know, everyone throws around the word innovation all the time, right? Innovation is that. What do I got to do to close the gap? What do I do differently? What's the technology? What's the training? Whatever the mix is here that will get us where we need to be.
Well, and, with Ron Rowe, right?
Yes.
I mean, I hear compliment after compliment after compliment about Ron taking people through the process. Here's what you want to do. Hey, can't do it this way, but let's figure out a way to do it. I mean, there's so many compliments about how that guy walks people through the process and gets them to where they need to be. But like Councilman Owen said, you know, sometimes we chisel these rules that are kind of unintended consequences where we create, now we're creating a lot of rules for Ron to get people through. But, staff says, hey, people keep coming in and they keep wanting to do this, but this conflicts with this. Guys need to fix it. And we have fixed it, just like the signage for churches. We fixed that. People kept, wanting different things, and we finally, corrected that. So, it's a balance. And like Daniel said, sometimes we need to be kind of cautious of, hurrying up and doing things because, time is not.
But remember what you said. If we want to become that economic hub, if we want to change those metrics, it's going to require you to do things differently. So the question is, what do you want him to do? What do you want him to focus on? And what can he do that controls that will make it more business friendly? Or increase the number of businesses? That's what we're trying to get you, that targeted action that says, okay, if we're going to increase it, what do we got to do? And from an operation perspective, just think of your bank. You know, you want to increase sales, you want to increase revenue, do some operational thing that he's got to do well. What's that piece? I'm sorry, Matt, you're going to say something.
No, I think we've already talked about it, so.
That's okay. This is kind of a tough one, isn't it? Because you're looking for that lever that you really want to excel in that increases the process.
It's a fine line here on Council of Governors. I don't get into micromanaging, telling you what to do, or Mark what to do on, you know, I think, I like Council of Red. Susan doesn't like Council of Red. John wants, you know, a stone property. When we get into these, that's not, I don't want to get there. What I want, you know, Council to be aware, and then if the staff's got to come back to Council as a sit here, that there's not just conflict as it leaves here today, that it goes to Matt, that it goes to Mark, that it goes to Ty, that it goes down to the building and planning and zoning, that there's just, there's conflicting messages. And they go into that racetrack thing, they wanted a red on it. You know, there was some that didn't want a red on it, there was some that didn't have a problem with a red on it, and the community had a problem with the racetrack as a whole. There's nothing in there that said they couldn't have red if it turned into an extra. But my session wasn't for 3 weeks because we're sitting there fighting about, you know, something that's not even proposed. That's where just.
Lawyers are here. but I think if we go back to the permitting process, what he can do well is ensure the process is smooth and timely to get to the conversation. Now that conversation, you know, it is what it is.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, what are your thoughts of what, for business friendly, what do you think you need to do to help that?
I'm looking at this from two different levels. You know, you've got two dashboards. I love that analysis. You know, you get the council's dashboard, what you're trying to establish right now. But let me give you some insight into the dashboard I'm looking at, the operational side. And to me, I am a disciple of Jim Collins. If you read his book, Good to Great. I believe it's first who and then what. In other words, you got to get the right people on the bus, given the right seat, and get the wrong people off the bus before you can do anything successful. And what that means is it's about the hiring process. It's about hiring people that are self-motivated, self-led, self-driven, because they're going to do the right things up front the first time. Why? It's who they are. It's what they do. It's in their DNA. It's just part of them. Money doesn't change that. Money is simply a way of recruiting them and retaining them. That's all it is. And so to me, the backdoor dashboard is hiring the right people, training the right people, and getting them in the right seat. So your question is, what's the dashboard need to say for city council? If you're driving down that city council car and the dash light's coming on, what should it read? Permit timeliness is a good one. I'm struggling right now actually to figure that out. I was thinking a minute ago, what about the number of compliments the city gets? That's such a ebb and flow type of thing. It's not really a good indicator. Let me turn it over to my staff. Staff, what do you guys think in terms of a dashboard indicator of the city council?
On just the whole notion of operational
excellence.
That is a permit if we're talking about the whole.
Yes.
But we're targeted to business right now.
Well, business is long dependability, reliability, assistance.
Predictability. Processes.
Are we talking in terms of fiber? I don't know, it's going to be at 98%, 99% of the time. I'll give you the 1%, but I can give you much more.
They'll give you the 1%. 1% till it's out.
Yeah.
1% needs to happen on Sunday morning before 4 a.m.
That's on that 100%, right?
Yeah. In the big picture, let's go back here for 1 second and talk a little bit about what we are doing. The 2035 vision plan. The entire basis, at least from my perspective, of that plan is about business friendly. I mean, for me, when I talk to my staff, when I think about it, so we're taking all these multiple land use categories and zoning categories, and we're condensing them from a larger number to a fewer number. And we're taking ultimately, like our code that exists today, we'll say, you have zoning with whatever, doesn't matter, with B4. And you look at a chart and say, B4, you can have all these kinds of uses. If you're not in that chart, you can't have that use on that property. And so the first part of the equation is somebody says, okay, they look, it could be a realtor, it could be a property owner, it doesn't matter. They look at the table and they say, oh, before I could have a car wash, great. Well, but there's a lot more to that equation. If you only have a half acre property, you may not be able to fit a car wash on that property. So you have to look at the land, that just makes sense. You have a hospital, but you might not be able to fit a hospital on a half acre. So you have to look at all the other factors, right? So what we're trying to do in the 2035 vision and the code revisions is, instead of saying, well, you can't have these uses, or you can only have these uses, we're trying to create a system where it's much simpler to understand, more predictable. It's more about the form of the building. Where does the building sit on the property? So instead of saying no, we're trying to say yes to the use. Yes, you can have that use. There'll be some uses that are excluded. We don't want certain types of uses next to schools, for example. But by and large, we can have a much greater variety of uses and areas. It's kind of, where does it sit on the property? What is the access? Will it create a traffic conflict? We're trying to make it so that we can say yes more often. It's just a matter of design. So that's a big initiative that council's been working on for 2 years, almost 3 years now, that will help business friendly dramatically.
Yeah, and I think he's right on target. Like Daniel said, you know, I mean, council's thing is your big picture tax stuff, how he gets there is, you know, and you don't want to tell them, you know, exactly, you know, the things to do. But you know, just from a philosophical standpoint, and, you know, some people think common sense is what I think is common sense, you know, be common sense to someone else, you know. But just treat people with respect. And I know that, you know, the police department, you know, that's one of the things that we instill in our officers, whether the guy is, you know, a murderer or a rapist, or you stop them for a traffic citation. Treat them with respect. If you're arresting it and putting that back in the car, treat them with respect. You know, just saying things like, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, please, thank you. And that means a lot to people. So just philosophically, just have respect for people and treat them, you know, in a kind manner. I mean, I don't think sometimes people in government, you know, you don't get that response, but just treat people like, you know, you want to be treated. And I think that goes a long, long way. Do what you say you're going to do. Like, you know, Larry was saying, you know, if I tell somebody I'm going to come out there and I'm going to install, you know, put your electric in at a certain time, do it. You know, if you made a mistake, call them. I apologize. Our guys are not going to be out there at a certain time. We're going to be here this time. Apologize. Right up front
of
people. I think that goes a long, long way.
I want to agree with the mayor. That goes a long way to making things better. And to what Matt said about hiring the right people, it goes back to what I said about somebody at a lower level being able to handle a problem. Right. And if we hire the right people, they're going to take care of the problem, mm-hmm. because they care.
Right.
And that's the process he's done.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking to, I was riding with an officer one night, and they said, you know, who's the old man there? You know, Austin didn't, because Sir Douglas, that's the mayor. That was your mayor. I said, yes. Oh, God, people hate you out here. He said, really? And I said, yes, your officers won't let us get away with anything. And I said, but are they nice to you? He said, oh, yeah, they're very nice to us. Hey. Yeah.
What about, in terms of a measure that council can wrap their hands around, if I got faith, correct me, Dave, what about, you know, we have a lot of enterprise funds. We've got electric, water and sewer, sanitation, stormwater. What about the issue of reliability? You know, that ties in well with business functions. For example, an easy one is if you don't have electricity, you're not generating transactions, you're not making money. So what about a measure relating to, in terms of business, reliability? Either, you know, how many outages you have or how long they are, and that type of thing can go to all the enterprise types of funds, which is a big facet of our business, as we talked about yesterday.
Water.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know this restoring service.
Exactly.
Can we measure business satisfaction levels? You know, 90% satisfaction.
And I think that's where we capture it. Is up our quality of place where we say the friendly business will reduce some of that transactional. So can I steal you?
But you stop, Daniel, you were here. You guys weren't here. Councilwoman Rich, President, you were here. Remember that survey that we did about, was it 2004? Something where we sent out, remember that?
Yeah.
Y'all remember that? Y'all were here.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I can't remember how we did it, but it was like, rate us on, and we got, it was great.
It came up by and large very
well. Yeah. Is there a way we could do that again?
Victory marketing.
building right now, the Tucker building, the survey for us.
Yeah, yeah. If we've got it, we share it with the council members. Remember that, Daniel? Yeah. It was rating us on, like you're saying, Senator, rating us on different things that we do. It was a good response.
Can I give a couple suggestions? That's a tough one. So let me throw something at you that you can think about. Is in broad terms, and we may target it, you know, but you know, if from an operational excellence, you want the permits timely, you want electricity on, you want water and sewer on, code enforcement response timely, call center pickup or call center handle first time kind of thing, and it's kind of like a public works work order. So the pothole's fixed, you know, 90% of the time within X hours kind of thing. You follow me? Are we in the right area to play?
Is that operational, maybe?
Yes.
Would you put like police and fire response to incidents or those kinds of things?
You could do response time. So you can add police response time, fire response time.
I might add one other property damage in terms of stormwater, in terms of stormwater utility, in terms of trying to prevent property damage.
I'm sorry, one more time.
Property damage.
City calls. You're talking about city calls.
Yes. Yeah.
I kind of like where you're going. It's a big macro measure. I mean, if you can't, I mean, you know, websites, they all talk about their uptime, right? Well, you need to talk about your reliability of your infrastructure.
When you say property damage, are you talking about from a claims perspective?
Yes. Yes. So if I can turn around time,
that's the problem you just really came to resolve. Timeless of the timeless of reporting accurate information on the budget. That's a bigger term. I don't agree with a lot of years before. But we never want to see that revert. Council will be scaling. There's somebody that is assured that these are the only times term accurately in our time is not actually some sort of operational authority periodically.
That's very important.
What about something like reduce, you know, legal fees, those kinds of things?
Yeah.
Oh, welcome. So let me ask you, I think we're getting close, don't you? And are these things that can positively impact your desire to increase and be an economic hub and quality of place? Because if you pick up the phone and you do the code enforcement and the utilities, I'm in a pretty good spot, you know? And as we go up, and they're friendly too. And that's where you get to that transactional, that perception data.
And like I said, I don't know that you put it on there, but just every one of those gets sprinkled with, you know, just vision awareness. All of that just pieces back to where we're headed, why we're doing what we're doing, where we're going. It's just a employee awareness is not, I'm doing this because why? You know, not to answer that, well, I just want this done so I have to go back in. What I was talking about is just right. The workforce that understands doing this because this leads to this, this goes all the way down, and everything is, it's always stacked.
Yeah. They're telling them. Stormwater.
I don't know.
So a quick story. So I was working with the Public Works Department, you know, and well, that's a tough group, Public Works guys, you know, and you take those, you know, crazy Public Works guys, but now you have the folks that clean the ditches, the stormwater, you just elevated, you know, these. And the county manager was, you know, measures, how do we know we're doing, so I was working with that specific group. And that was one angry group, you know. The budget, no raises, our equipment sucks, you know, we don't get new equipment, you know, they're just in a really bad place. And so it kind of goes, you know, people love their job. So I, you know, I asked them, I said, what do you do? And with the biggest smile, they go, we clean the ditches. Really? You clean the ditches. And they love it. They love it. And so I asked them, I said, well, who cares? You know, why do we even clean the ditches? And then that quick, they go, we clean it so the water moves. Who cares if the water moves? And again, that quick was, you get mosquitoes, right? So then it suddenly clicked. They were no longer in the mowing business. They were in the public health business. And so, yeah, they measure the number of miles cleaned, but now their measure is the incidence of mosquito-borne diseases in the community. Now you got people's interest. You follow me? Well, you take a guy that just cleaned the ditches, and suddenly he's side by side with the county health department director solving a major health issue that can certainly impact the economy, doesn't it? And that's what we've got to connect with everyone in the organization. One other quick story, true story. This was a nonprofit, and they this one does Child Protector. So abused children, they come in and rescue the children and provide short, medium, and long-term housing for the children. And you know, these nonprofits are so dependent upon grants, you know, and they're always on a thin scale, aren't they? You know, funding wise, you know. And so you've got the caseworkers out there that, you know, love the children and do whatever, and they work crazy hours, right? But then you got the accountant behind the scenes who's worried about the money. You with me?
Yeah.
And so he's on staff, give me your expense reports. You know, they're late, they're not accurate, you know, all those kinds of things. So, you know, they keep being late. So he keeps firing his emails out to them. And so as they keep being late, his emails become angrier, now they're all calf, you know where I'm going? You know, that kind of thing, it's frustration. So there was this really great CEO, and he saw this war occurring between operational and support. So the CEO goes, I want you to go hang out with the staff and work with them for a week and see what they do handling the children. And of course the guy goes, there's no way I'm gonna do this, true story. He says, no, you're really gonna go spend a week and hang out with these folks. So he's out working with the caseworkers, and he sees them moving mountains to care for these children, right? And working. Do you think they're 9-to-5?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're doing all these kinds of things to ensure the children are protected. You know, they're removed, and they're in a safe home, okay? The last thing that they want to worry about is what? About paperwork. So as the CFO is talking to the caseworkers, he's saying, why can't you get this stuff in? And the caseworkers go, are you kidding me? This is the most complicated process. You know, we can't this, we can't that. Why can't you do this? So then a partnership formed. And so then they recreated the process, right? So now the CFO, who does the expense stuff, he's no longer the CFO. What he figured out is if he can help the caseworkers spend 5 hours a week less doing paperwork, where do they get to spend that 5 hours?
With the kids.
With the children. So suddenly the CFO is no longer the CFO. He is what? He's helping children. And so no matter what your gig is, he's in the child protective business. Just this day job is just an in-between to get there. So when Matt talked about the janitor at NASA, you with me? Or the CFO, or the stormwater guy, we got to figure out how, no matter what your gig is, we're in the economic hub business. That's what we got to figure out. And it doesn't happen overnight, but you start drawing those connections and what they do.
Well, when we have a break, tell me who that child welfare organization is, because I serve on the board of one of those. That's a great idea to have the CFO go out there. Yeah, that's what I was talking about the other day, that everybody has a real important role to play. I mean, the guy that's going out and giving a CO to a business to open up, he's the man or the gal. I mean, I got 50 employees waiting to, get going tomorrow. If I can't get that CO, I'm out of business. So, yeah, I mean, he or she plays a very, very important role. And everybody can understand what we're trying to do here is, get to, create an economic hub, be operationally excellent, make that customer satisfied. But, everybody knows that that's what our end goal is.
And once people get that connection, they come to work and they have a different attitude, don't they? They see it. I'm part of a system. I'm part of the community. The esprit de corps comes in.
What to say, but if you don't know it, it's just about anything. It helps to say that as you leave here today, just from a council standpoint, ask yourself what we've done the last 2 days. Is this what we want? Is this what we believe in? And this is what we're going to carry out? Because we have two meetings that are coming down in the next 60 to 90 days. This will be challenged by some. Go ahead and sit and finish reform. If you'll hear it, this will be challenged. We're going to be the fire union impasse. And the belief in this will be challenged. So, Matt talked about it, some of those people who see it. And that's why I talk about vision awareness. Just with the story that you're talking about, laying the ditches. There'll be some who get the vision, there'll be some that don't. We have that phobia. There'll be a challenge here if you believe in this. And seeing where we can, when we get fractured, can we not get fractured? So, it's going to happen. You will hear it and you will see it. And has this 2 days been all for naught, or do we really carry this out?
And in fact, what I've said before about coming up with a number, if we tell the employees we can't afford that defined benefit pension plan, whatever that cash flow is, be ready to say, but this is what we can't afford, whatever that number is. So you can say, here's why we can't afford it, but this is what we can't afford, this is what's sustainable, that we can keep going. Let me give you a real quick example about talking about my attitude and operational life and stuff. There was a restaurant that was opening here. There were like 17 things they were trying to get open, 17 things on their punch list that, Coke, whoever was doing it, you got to fix this before we give you your CO. They had people flying in from LA and Kansas City to do job training for about 150 employees. It was a sink. It was a quarter of an inch in the wrong place. The company had to spend $1,600 to move that sink, redo it, and move it a quarter of an inch before they could get a CO. And the person that was going to do it was out on vacation on Friday. They had people that were going to come in on Monday to do this training. I can't get to you until Wednesday. Things like that should never, ever, ever, ever happen. And like I said, to me, that's common sense. Just keep the CO and worry about it later, which Rick was here then. That's what ended up happening. But they shouldn't be calling me having to try to, figure that out. Someone should just be able to figure that out.
I agree with you on that, and we try very hard to provide for those flexibilities. On the other hand, if there's a rule, in Daniel's case, if there's a regulation or some type of policy that is prohibiting these types of outcomes, it kind of puts the staff in that difficult, again, position And if that rule is the problem, let's change that rule. You know, let's change the policy that staff's being asked to enforce. You know, so that's part of the solution as well, I think.
Well, but that goes back to, I'm going to make an executive decision, and I've got 150 people that need that are going to have job training on Monday. It's Friday. This guy needs to open up. He's done 16 other things I've asked him to do. There's a sink that's on a...
That's a no-brainer.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a no-brainer.
He said, well, I can't get it here, CEO. That sink's a quarter of an inch wrong. You've got to spend $1,600 to have your photo come in here, rip it all out, move it, and put it in.
That's a temporary CEO. We can go on handle it today.
Yeah, exactly. But the message that they gave was, I'm not getting your CEO. Yeah. It cannot be done. They're shutting you down.
Well, you know, the correct answer, that which would alleviate being called in the first place, is, sir, I don't have the authority to give you the CO. Let me talk to my, you know, superior and go up the chain of command and use the chain of command to our benefit.
Yeah. Well, but even walk up on a little step forward, make an executive decision, I'm going to give you your CO. I'll worry about getting in trouble, you know, later. But I would never, ever, ever, ever put that person, you know, reprimand that person for making a decision.
And the reality is, and if I could just opine here for a moment, I know the time frame's late, it goes back to that issue of bureaucratic organization,
right,
where it's so rule-laden,
right,
staff trying to abide by every rule for fear of stepping outside, they're going to get their hands slapped.
Right.
In a disciplined organization, they're given this flexibility,
right,
to hire the right people, to make those type of decisions in the field, because we know they're going to do the right job in doing it.
Right.
Let's look to select four or five of these that we want to roll up. Is there one on here that's an easy one that we can agree upon?
Electric reliability.
Yes, yes.
Are you asking one of those that will create operational excellence?
Yeah, which ones do we want to select that will go up there?
The top three or four.
Permit, electric, and water?
Yeah, but I mean, you know.
But I think that, I think those are important. From my perspective, I'd like to figure the reason why we're responsible.
So it's an easy one we can agree to here?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
So measure, I mean, find out what it is now, what do you want it to go to? There's a lot, yeah, there's a lot more involved.
What did you say? Perfect.
Electric liability.
Yeah, but could we change that to utility?
Sure.
Liability, so yeah.
It's kind of combined. Good idea. Okay, third one.
What is code enforcement? What are we doing with code enforcement?
It could be timeliness, responsiveness, it could be percent closed, with out of hearing, or you know what I mean? Something to do with code.
I think it's more of an action item.
This is not older, but response times to any problem. You know, we've got police and fire on their response time. We need to have a response time for if you call about the pothole or whatever the heck you think.
Yep, and that's what we were talking about here. So can we do responsiveness? So when someone calls, there's nothing frustrating. Say, hey, I called them and they didn't do anything. You want a system that's reliable and consistent. So work order timeliness one, you just want a macro measure they're meeting that goal.
Yeah, I mean, don't we have something on our website called Track It, where it's all that stuff?
That's right, you can build it for us. That's right, you can build it for us.
Well, if John is talking about, in all, any sort of call that we get, any sort of request that we get, we're tracking what that response time is.
If we're using TBA and Cogsdale, or just TBA? GBA right now. Okay, I'll do it.
So we had to make some credit.
GBA is a workforce.
Yeah.
Yes.
Timeliness, that makes sense.
So, yeah. Traffic increase.
This one?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was gonna circle it.
You know, it's timeliness and what's the problem resolved?
Okay.
Kind of philosophical, I mean, that, and that whole thing, which is like I was talking about earlier, it's just like, you know, kind of have the golden rule there, just doing to others, do what happened, doing to you. To treat people with respect. And again, I think that goes a long way. All those other things, you know, will happen, you know, if you do that. And you'll have all those things happen.
And to add to that,
that's got to be your philosophy as an employee in the city of Ocala.
And to add to that, if you use that rule, at some point, it'll make a difference if a company or someone moving here, at some point. It may be the sanitation worker, it may be Parks and Recreation, cleaning up on the square. Someone's going to say the right thing to some CEO who wants to move his company.
All the employees are the face of our community.
You know, when you go to the doctor and you get out of procedure, say you have surgery, you want a really good doctor, don't you? It's knowledgeable, but it makes it even better when they're nice.
Right.
So you want both. So you want the technical stuff, and what lays on top of it is what differentiates you from other cities. And that's his challenge with the 900 staff, and that's some of the action stuff. What can we do to ensure? What can we do to recognize? What can we do to promote staff that emulate those behaviors? So, Dan, a couple things we talked about was kind of a macro utility reliability. We talked about fire, EMS response time, and we're considering kind of a general workload timeliness that could probably come into the call center a number of different ways, right? You know, so timeliness of that. What about permit or a targeted permit measure? Is that something we should consider to help business friendly?
Are the permits kind of around, like you spell that, you know, some of them are just rude, some of them are good. There are different sort of general categories.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you could, you may just come in and get an electrical permit or a plumbing permit or
right.
Mechanical systems. You might come and just get a paving permit because you want to add parking.
Do we have a formal sort of delineation of this is just a small thing or this is a whole development?
We do. We have, for example, we have a couple different flow charts that will show. Like we have one flow chart that shows if you're residential, if you're going to do a residential permit, like you're building a new home, and if you're going to do commercial development, if it hits a certain threshold, if it's a small project, you'd go through a minor site plan process. If it's a major project, you go for the full site plan. And it also, in that flow chart, shows the PUD process or like subdivision development or shopping center development. So we've got a flow chart that shows. Well, we have one sheet that kind of, in a very large level, shows all of those on one sheet. So somebody can look at all of that. And then in each of those, we have a flow chart. You could break it down even further, show whichever path you choose, an additional flow chart that will show the different components of it, like electrical permit, building permit. We have that information. We probably don't do a good job of disseminating it, probably. I was thinking about it as we're talking.
As a way of measuring, if they're distinctive enough that we can say, okay, these fall permits, we're going to try and get those down to this amount.
I think so. I think.
The sort of medium size, we're going to
try
to get this. The bigger ones, we're going to work in this area.
I think the first step for me would be to go back. When we issue permits in traffic, we have, I'm not sure this is 100% correct. I'll go look at it. But for different types of permits, we have different prefixes.
Right.
And so the first thing I would do is probably try to pull and track it per prefix to try to find out how much time it took when a permit application was submitted to when the permit was issued and look at the time associated with those permits.
Right.
And try to report back, you know, this is how long it takes us to do whatever permit. And then we would look at that. Now, I don't know if the Florida Benchmarking Association, I don't remember, I mean, if they show different time responses for permit issues or different
time.
Yeah, we'll go. I think we need to do some groundwork. We need to look at that first. Okay.
So yeah, I think we can
add that. So staff will come back with a more specific targeted measure relative to permit. Is that okay? One, two, three, four. Is there a need for a fifth one? Any compelling?
Well, you need to, when you measure them, you have to say, here's what we want to get to, and here's how you should fix it or get there. I mean, if you tell me, I want your police or fire, response time to be lower, then tell me, what you want it to be, and tell me, how we're gonna get there. I mean, I don't know, different things are, calls have different response times, depending on what the emergency is. I mean, if you, get a call on the radio and says, shots fired and, so-and-so, suspect, so we've been shot. I guarantee you the response.
The difference between three-part, three-part and one, two, and three.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the thing with the permit. You've got different.
Right.
You've got different criteria, different types of call, different permits. So that would be more
of that. One of the things, I'll say this out loud, I was going to ask you, but one of the calls that I get from time to time, and y'all may get it too, is someone will call and say, I'm turning my plans for my engineering plans, and I got a list of, things that I need to do. Is there software that, because if you tell me to do this, now it's changed and it's going to cause another problem, but is there software that says you need to move that curb, 2 feet this way? Well, if I move that curb 2 feet this way, it's going to cause something else that the engineering department, they can plug that in and say, if I make him do this, it's going to cause this. Because what happens is they'll get back and they'll say, there's 15 things that you need to do. I'll do that. I'll resubmit it, pay another resubmittal fee, I guess.
Yes.
And then they'll come back with another list and say, okay, because you did this, now you need to do this. And then I'll get it back again and again. I mean, is there a way that we can predict if I ask you to do this, that software is going to say,
well, it's pretty complicated.
Yeah, very complicated.
Because as a design professional, you are licensed by the state. You've gone through all the requisite training to problem solve.
Right.
So our code might say you have to move this 2 feet or something. There'd be a certain code that's together. But whether it's a building or a site or whatever, could impact all these other things.
Right.
But how you as a designer are going to solve that solution on the other things, it may not be the architect. That's right, the architect or the engineer might go, well, to solve the other problems, I want to do this. We don't necessarily want to get into the game of dictating those things. What we try to do is, if they meet with us, especially early on, we try to predict for them the issues that we can see that, there's all these competing interests, and we try to look at all of them and say, okay, well, here's where we see some trouble areas, and here's some of our suggestions on how you might deal with them. At a high level, but when we start getting into the specific designs, we don't want to be the designers. We don't want to tell them, this is how you need to, we got to be careful with this.
Moral of the Joe London
Micro. We don't want, that's partly what I'm speaking to.
So the moral of the Joe London Micro.
Yes.
When you tell them to do this, they need to predict, if I do this, and this is going to happen. But when they do that, then that's going to happen. Then they're going to resubmit it again.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but they should do, I think part of their ownership is if either A, they know our system, our codes well enough, they can predict that up front.
Okay.
Or if they don't, and we're in the design review process, and we say, okay, you have to move this. They just say, well, do you realize, whoever goes to site plan review, that means you're going to change the list, and they could troubleshoot that. They could talk about that on the phone.
We resubmit it.
Yes.
Input.
Yes. That's the best scenario.
Gotcha.
As far as claims go, is this a measure we should consider as an organization? Report out.
I'm sorry. Claims, we talked about number of claims would potentially be a representation of whether we're doing all of these other things well. If the electricity's on, people aren't asking for us to pay for what was in their freezer because they didn't have the electricity on. No flooding, those kinds of things. Right. If these are not high, then perhaps we're doing these things well.
You like it?
I think it's important.
You guys okay with that?
She
what?
She just thought it would be a little more than that.
She's very quiet.
You have smell here?
Sure, go.
Okay. Sure. All right, here's what we're going to do. You ready? We'll populate those up. We're going to take a 10-minute break. And then we're going to come back and just kind of a free conversation about things that you all want to talk about. We want to target it around the four, but any kind of key actions that you think, you know, just kind of talk to each other that you think you want to be considering in the future that you want to do relative to these four goals. So just a free, you guys talk.
We'll take 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay. Can you do 5 minutes? Just real quick.
See, that's a man, so that means a 5 minute break for all of us.
We're in daylight.
We don't need a break. Let's keep going.
I totally want to
become
a venue, and I
don't
like to
support her. Okay, I'm going to be more physical. That's my attention. Everything, not everything, but there's a strong component on the plan review side, whether it's building department on life service or quality of life, right? There's no doubt we do. But we don't want to elevate those issues more than the EPO. We need to make sure that we're balancing that conversation we have internally more. And I brought a lot of notes down to what I wanted to do with them to help to further understand. This method, it's a closed method. It's a slip. We have to work through that, work around it. And then, like you said, bring that to Trump's security system. We eliminate this, or give us more discretion, you know, or something like that. That's right. Oh, absolutely. That's exactly right. That's right. Yes. I don't really care. That's not my problem. That's your problem. Yeah, you want to put this business in here. Right? Really? Okay. Yeah. I agree a lot. We'll keep making progress. Here's the problem, though. Because you said I do a lot. This is the reality. You know, I think everyone has that on high level. They listen to voters. I'll use that as an example that applies. Police and fire, all those other departments. We, for example, we can say we want an emphasis on response instead of just playing off. Okay? So here's what, as a man, given the research that I've done, here's what we would respond to. Okay, that's the, if the priority is timeliness of our responses is a claim, then here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be directing my staff to not initiate with many of their own cases. In other words, we may drive by and see a problem.
Yeah.
We're going to put more of a focus on making sure that every time we get a call, we're out there within 2 hours. That's right. So that what happens is that we probably initiate fewer cases because we have to make sure we're always responding quickly to hit one. And here's the overall point.
on the back end, the closing of the cases, that time that it takes to close the cases will increase. Because we're putting all of our resources and energy to find an responsible. So that's a value choice that people have to understand, that where you put your emphasis will have implications on the other side of the house. Unless we just keep throwing all the resources to me. Well, what they do typically is, they might have, let's say, 18 buildings inspection or something like that. So they might go out, do their inspection, when they're doing their inspection, whether it's a repeat inspection or an initial inspection, they're supposed to kind of come out and then look around it. And they're supposed to pick up parties. I think for the back end, because of the time you get over here, because this is not responsiveness, they might go, well, I can only spend 5 minutes here because I've got to get to my next site. So the amount that they can pick up is even less because we put the emphasis on responsiveness to the industry. So that's the conundrum that we have a little bit is, because I can tell you when we benchmark ourselves over the Jewish citizens, my opinion, we are far from this community, we are far less than half. We're less than half. Now, I'm not saying that we need to speak up. That's part of the equation. The other part of the equation I see when I look at that part is we're all responsible for the good work of the council, but we're lagging behind. I don't have to show you that.
We
are, there are some cities that were only single person out as a result of this plan. We are not. We initiated our own cases and we go to the fund. What that does is, like when I gave you the example, John, let's say we're going out to the site, and if you stop and the office is looking around, okay, we're running over there. That doesn't mean that he's going to go back and repeat the screen. He might just look at everything right up because he's going to get really good at this site. He's got out they don't want to get it.
Okay, we ready?
Everything's done. And they're trying to do that so that they're getting taken care of. They're also keeping the calls and sending up to you guys.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Chip's doing a great job.
Mark, I sent Ty a link to a website, a city in North Carolina, that has a visual process.
Yeah.
It was pretty neat.
Just recently or a while ago?
Since? Yeah, a couple weeks ago. I sent it at the
Well, there's some more communication conversation towards that end.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. So we're going to transition here. I think you guys did some great work. Staff is going to take this and operationalize the measures, come back with a hard measure for your final input and suggestions. So at this point, we're just going to move to the item on the agenda of council open discussion conversation. Matt, you want to lead it? Any direction?
Yeah, let me, Mr. Stanford, take 30 seconds. With regards to the agenda, just kind of keep you on task. If we complete it essentially up to the completion of goal 4, if you'll look there on day 2, be completed through goal four. The next item, strategic planning follow-up meetings. What that was about is challenging council members to having, rather than staff simply giving you a report every quarter about the strategic plan and the measures, what we thought we'd do is establish a work meeting every quarter, discuss this, so that it's front and center. It's not out of sight, out of mind, so we can keep it moving forward. And so, with your permission, what I'll do is I'll arrange a work meeting once a quarter, discuss just a strategic plan, talk about the measures, talk about how we're performing, talk about challenges, talk about maybe some modifications that are necessary to keep us on the straight and narrow. So, with your permission, I'll go ahead and do that. And then what we're doing essentially right now is we're going to jump down to City Council open discussion. We'll have that as long as you want. Stay here as short as long as you want. And once that's done, depending on the time, we've got lunch coming, and we'll do a working lunch. So you can work the lunch hour here. We'll drop back down to the city initiatives. I don't think we'll get a lot of those done, but that's okay. But with Pat here, what I would like to do is talk about stormwater fees and fire fees. This relates to the Marion County School Board and have that discussion. For any item that we don't get to today, what we'll do is attach into some work meeting in the future, and we'll hit them and take care of it at that time. So again, to reiterate, we will come back to you quarterly and discuss the strategic plan, the measures, the outcome, the challenges. Right now is your time. Discuss any issues, any challenges that you want to bring forth. Then when that's done, we'll drop back and engage Pat and talk more about the Marion County School Board and the non-payment of fire fees and stormwater fees.
And Catherine, this is for you. I've had, it's at least every other week, I'm still getting those calls to businesses that say, hey, we want to be part of the recycling program. Can you give us an update, or if not today, at the next meeting, when that possibly could be, so I can give them an answer?
We cannot regulate recycling for businesses. By Florida statute, we're not allowed to do that. If it's a service that perhaps we want to offer on, you know, a voluntary or a paid basis, but then we're competing with some of the private sector. So that's why we haven't done commercial at all. Yeah, we cannot regulate it for commercial businesses.
So in essence, it comes down to a policy decision. If you want to extend recycling services to the private sector, and if so, recognize you will compete at some level with some of the existing vendors that are doing that service now.
Which we compete with people that are doing residential service there too.
Not in the city. We have
not in the city.
The city requires a franchise only with the city of Ocala to provide that service.
For residential. But if we weren't doing residential, you know, someone else would come in and fill that void. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, would that be another, would it be a revenue source for us, or would it break even, or is it? We did it?
Well, at this point, because we've outsourced it, it really isn't the city so much doing it. Now, we have given Waste Pro's phone number out to businesses that have called in, and they can contact them directly, but understanding there are other recycling groups out there that would want an opportunity to serve those businesses also.
Well, I understand now. I didn't realize that there was other groups actually service businesses. So.
Maybe what we can do as a staff is armor you with a list of those businesses. And so if someone talks to you, simply here's a list of people that are ready and willing to take recyclables.
Sure.
And we have that list, so I have it right available. I'll get it to you.
Okay. Does council want to reconsider that policy decision and look at providing recycle service on some level to commercial businesses?
Not sure I'm willing to do that just yet. I'd like to look at it, though.
Okay.
Maybe it's just the people I'm running into. There are a lot of them say, hey, if we get our regular garbage picked up by the city, we've got a lot of them not using them.
Mm-hmm.
They're small businesses.
Well, and it could possibly cost us revenue also, because if they start recycling, then they're going to want their dumpster downsized, which is less revenue for us.
Okay, we don't do that. But look at it. It's not a measure.
Well, strategic plan would be physically sustainable while we've got the path down here with the meter on.
What we get on the agenda is we listed a couple items that we wanted to get to. One of them, of course, was a conversation on Marion County School Board. I asked Pat to be here on my invitation to talk about the status of the appeals, where we're at with that, and kind of get some more direction from City Council in terms of, do you want to change course? Are you still true to the existing course? And kind of have that discussion. So maybe Pat can give us an update.
Can we have there or here?
You can write there, fine.
Let me break it down. City, three broad areas I think you should consider. One is legislative, second is the political, and third is collateral payments. We touched base with the legislative. Daniel gave an update last City Council meeting about it. I think we had discussion with our delegation. We got lobbyists. I don't know what our lobbyists are doing about that issue or not, but I think it's something we should push on the fronts. I think that the statutes are misinterpreted by our opponents. The be that it may, that could be fixed legislatively, so there's no doubt about it. And so, really, it's something that we can do, we probably should do, is push the legislation. What Daniel did the other day, perhaps through our lobbyists. And our appellate attorney, Steve Brannick, is also the general counsel for the Florida Stormwater Association. And as you may or may not know, this issue is now popping up all over the state with municipal stormwater providers, county stormwater providers. And I'm getting phone calls from their lawyers, so it may be advantageous for us to make contact with the Stormwater Association's appellate attorney. Have them push the right buttons too, and the League of City may get another opportunity. But at every level, the local delegation, the Stormwater Association, through our lobbyists, whatever ways we can do it, I would get that button pushed. The button to push is the legislature told us to do this. They required us to have a stormwater system 15 years ago by statute, and we dutifully complied with that requirement. And in doing so, they said, we're allowed to charge utility fees for it. The Florida Supreme Court has said, governmental entities like school boards owe it. Those issues are all been legislated and decided. This issue ends on this whole contract sovereignty. How will they owe it? How will the legislature told us to do it? How will the legislature empower us to give us the charge of utility fees for it? All those things have been decided, and it's not questionable. So, we need to push all those on the legislative front. The second front is the political, and I normally don't get into that, but I do think it's part of an overall strategy. We've got a new school board over there, mostly new school board, and some of the old ones are some of them. I had a conversation with Matt. Matt reported to me his conversation with three of the new school board members, Bobby James, a football coach and good friend. Maybe with Stacy and another
leader.
And reported you all those conversations very positive. I saw in the paper today they passed the civility proclamation or something. So I don't know if we get in the civility proclamation where we fall. But I also think we don't stick it in their eye. They're going to meet on the 17th, and hopefully they're going to decide where they're going to meet with the council. So let's do an opportunity to do the right thing. Hopefully they will do the right thing. They'll have an opportunity to talk to them. Remember, it's not just stormwater, it's the fire issue. And that's their issue is working back here. And we have the same legal challenges with that, but it's not the forefront right now. And they owe on that what ever happened to college. I do think it's somewhat productive to come here today because y'all are thinking globally. So I do want to throw this out globally about the about that issue. I know Chief Graham and the police department have had meetings already recently with the school board about school security. And so, and that comes with a price. I guess it's different stuff in Connecticut, guns and stuff. But anyway, they're having those meetings now, and I I've talked briefly with Chief Graham about it. Some of the numbers that are being thrown out for security, it's a pretty large number. So maybe when, if and when you get a chance to talk to the school board, maybe a way for us and staff to deal with it globally so that we're creating in this situation, not just talk about stormwater, let's talk about fire and even police services. We don't charge for like separate fire. Talk to them about that and their concerns about security and things like that. Where you all go with that, I don't know, but sometimes those problems can politically be some positive.
When was the last time you talked to the chief about that?
He told me the day after, I think, he actually met with some of the George Thomas and some of the folks over there.
Yeah, and I was in that meeting. I mean, if some of the things that were initially talked about that I've met with council members are actually, you know, going to happen as far as the cost. But there are some things that we're doing that we're not going to make public, but are just be done. But there will be an increased police presence within the schools, but not necessarily, you know, what we talked about.
If they're going to be done and there's no real cost to it, obviously, that's maybe a good entree when you meet with the board. You know, these things don't happen free.
Right.
And I mean, it's dedication to manpower and resources, and you don't pay for it. They don't pay for any police service. They don't pay everyone taxes. They don't pay for anything.
Well, they do split the cost with us on those. Is it the middle schools?
The special resource officers, the SROs that pay for it. They've been doing that for years.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That what we talked about was not those numbers that we talked about before. We're not doing that.
Right. Well, it's part of the political discussion. Right. That's not for me to tell you how to do it, just to say it's part of the political discussion. And another part of that political discussion is not just the stormwater and the fire user thing and potential discussions with the school board, but I'm never going to change my position that legally they are wrong until the court tells me I'm wrong, and I'm going to disagree with the court. But be that as it may, I'm very hesitant normally to tell you how to have policy on individual issues, but I just don't believe that if somebody's not paying a just bill, that, you know, you on every occasion give them what they're asking for free. And that's going to be a ad hoc decision on each individual item that they come to you for. Most of it's sports related, team related for the school. And using recreational facilities, but I sincerely believe they owe it, because the Supreme Court has said they owe it, and I think it's disingenuous for a sister governmental entity to say, yeah, we owe it, but you don't have a written contract, and we're not going to give you one, but we're going to continue to use it, and we're not going to pay for it, and then turn around and the very next day come to you and say, well, let's use this for free. That's a political call that y'all make, and that's my 2 cents on it. Legally, everything's done. Briefs are in. I told you council the other night. The appellate court ruled today. Will next week. Will next month. They're on their time, and they've worked in their own pace over there, and they have procedures, but their procedures don't require them to communicate for a specific time. They have internal, guidelines when they try to respond to stuff. They're not bound by that. And if one of the three judges in your three-judge panel at the appellate court sees something that they want researched or briefed additionally, they'll send it back to the clerks. The clerks will do the work. And you never know that. They send it back to the clerks and then, you know, make all things up a week or a month. You just don't know. So that's why you can't tell you when they're going to rule, except that the benefit rule of 2013. And I suspect it will in the next 2 or 3 months, but I can't say that. I think our brief written by Mr. Brandt was extraordinarily well written and well briefed. I think all of you have sent all of you. Also sent the Siegel's brief. I thought her brief was not well reasoned. It just had, to me, if you just look at the law, if you just look at the arguments the lawyer set forth, I think we have a very winning argument. That being said, there's a big out course rule, and we're at the preliminary injunction stage. We're not appealing the final judgment from a
fully completed case. So the standard for success at the preliminary stage is weighing against us, and that's not because of this case, it's just the way it is. Usually judges or more than fellow judges are disinclined to overrule the trial judge before the final conclusion. All the evidence has been taken in, there's a complete record, the case has been tried, and the final judgment has been ordered by the court. They're more inclined to reverse then than they are at the preliminary stage. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't appeal, I think we should have appealed, but the standard's a little bit different now than it will be after a final judgment. And so it may be that we don't prevail at the preliminary injunction stage on appeal. That does not mean that you don't ultimately prevail, probably not prevail with this judge at the final trial stage, but if you don't appeal on the second appeal, if you get that far, later on, because the standard is different, and you have a higher likelihood of success. But I'm very confident in the arguments made by Mr. Brennan. I really love his brief. I love his analysis. I think it's a very, very winning argument. I try to be objective about this stuff with my clients, not just y'all, but all my clients, where I tell them, you know, my analysis standing back is, you know, your sense of success is objectively that I can be with respect. I think we have a high likelihood of success, but I'm too political. But in the 60s and the 70s, the U.S. Supreme Court, there was a sea change in judicial philosophy, a massive sea change. It came from basically Griswold and Roe versus Wade decisions. Justice Douglas said at that point that there was a right of privacy in the Constitution. He said it emanated from the penumbra of the due process clause. And that since then, regardless of setting that issue aside, since then, the judicial philosophy, I think say judges can do more what they want to do than what the law tells them to do. And it's trickled down to trial judges, appellate judges at all levels. You see the ongoing political arguments, the strict structures for living the Constitution. But that argument plays out at the trial court level, the appellate court level. It's playing out in all our courts, and they're, you know, just something you have to deal with. But I think courts are much less inclined now than they were 40, 50 years ago to follow strictly what the law requires if they think following strictly what the law requires is a bad outcome. They will then find excuses not to follow what the law requires instead of letting the democratic process play out where if that's a bad outcome, the legislature deals with the political process. But that's all a soapbox. So that's also my way of telling you I'm glad appellate courts are going to do. There's 24 appellate judges over there. You get a three-judge panel. They're assigned at random, a three-judge panel. So it's some of it's like a jury, some of it's like a draw. I don't know who they are. I can look that up on the internet. I mean, if I saw who they were, I couldn't say that's the kind of judge that probably some things on the way. I can probably inquiry, but it's not worth it. Do it. It is what it is. They are as they are. I have no idea what they're presenting. That's sort of my summary. If I have any questions, I'll sort of try to answer.
At on the three judges, do all three have to vote for the just two?
Two out of three. Okay.
Can I just ask
if we win the injunction, my bet is, if we win the injunction, we win the appellate proceeding. But we can win on two things. If we win on their injunction against us, we could discontinue utility services. We could also win on our loss of injunction. They can't use our stormwater. They win on either one of those on our behalf. And I think, of course, if you're more inclined to rule on our behalf on right now, the issue of maintaining their facilities. That's probably this procedural level, the more winning one. If they say to the school board, they'll send it back to the trial judge. They say, the city's right. They'll send it back to the trial judge, Judge Singlish, and order him to enter an order
of injunction against the school board requires them not to use such hallmark facilities. But if and when that happened, my prediction is the school board would, your discussions with the school board should be pretty productive. And you would resolve that problem. And I think stormwater would then be off the, we'll be able to resolve that issue. We'll be back just to fire.
If the rules first, you give them an on air, and they don't, what happens?
So we have a contempt. He won't give them an order to pay us. He'll give us, on our injunction, by using the stormwater fees, the teleport judge to enter an order to Judge Singlish, requiring him to enter an order to keep the school board from using our stormwater facility. If the judge, if the school board refuses that order, they'll be held in contempt. Can't put them in jail for government body. They'll then start charging them. So, and a fine on some daily basis until they come into compliance. So I don't think that'll happen. I don't think that'll be an issue. I think they'll come into compliance. They're most likely to come back to us and make a deal or have stormwater resolved. If the judge didn't enter the order, then well, he'll get trouble with that because he's got a follow the practice. The stormwater was, I think we're up to 90 around.
I got it right here. Total stormwater fees paid now is $216,000.
Not paid.
What's the other one?
Fire fees is about $750,000.
So I want to go back to the relationship with the school board. Hopefully got a new regime over there, and hopefully, in fairness, you should. I mean, both them and us should try to reach common ground. We thought we were halfway there when we went to mediation, I guess it's still the head of in place back then. But anyway, we thought we were halfway. We had a meaningful discussion. And it was always very shocking to Brian and Daniel over there, the result of that. But then that's not where we were headed, at least it seemed like in the mediation. So, and the statutes require us to mediate our disputes. That's the other part of this I've never quite understood. We never talked to them formally about, in that statutory required framework, about stormwater. That's not been an issue. And I raised the first time to the judge that, how do they even hear? How do they ask for an injunction about the stormwater when they haven't gone through the procedure by statute? We've got a dispute or supposed to talk to us about. They haven't done that. So, but I do continue to think there's got to be linkage between, they want us to be good governmental partners. That's an across-the-board relationship. It's not a, you can't have it that one way on one thing and the other way you treat us.
If we were to lose, what is our exposure for other sovereigns to take a similar position?
Well, it's happened. It's happening throughout the state. I probably received 6 or 7 calls from city and county attorneys where they're being told that their school board is contemplating or talking about or threatening based on what's happened here, what's happened in Key West, and they've asked me for my advice. I put them in touch with Steve Brannick. I've sent them off briefs, sent them everything we've done so they prepared. And I've lobbied them, lobbied their council for commissions to do what we're starting to do, is talk to the legislature, talk to the Stormwater Association, talk to everybody they can on the legislative front to make this issue go away.
And then Dallas Mark's comments. What about the county saying we're not going to pay anymore? The state saying we're not going to pay anymore? The Fed saying the school don't have to do it. We're not going to pay it anymore. What about that snowball effect?
Locally, that could well happen. I mean, the county attorney, I suspect, I know, was well aware of the issue. But they
same problem for the house. This issue is strong with the huge way between the school board and the city. I don't know if they want to go there, but you know, we have to talk to them. But legally, we lose, and there's also an appellate decision that says they get to use it for free unless you have a written contract where you say, well, we'll have to give it to you. They can continue to use it. And they legally, they would be right in saying they're not paying. If that domino were to happen, right, so the school board is pretty clear, right? Going right back again to talk about common sense. State legislature will take the ultimate arrogant position. We wrote the statute. Municipalities have to do X, Y, and Z. Oh, by the way, we're not going to be involved in what we told you that you can and must do. Then it would seem to me that domino effect that you talk about the judges as the main outcomes that they're now. It's not as much about the law as this sort of gray area of, yeah, the law says this, but what kind of thing will that do? And it is very short-sighted by the courts to simply put this circle around school. The schools are crying for children, doing this for children. Sure, the city council is not going to turn water on the school. It has nothing to do with school. It has nothing to do with children when you're involved in. Because what will happen is all of a sudden, 56,000 residents, and we're sitting here talking about this economic development, we're sitting here talking about physically sustainable, and all of this, we're going to be sitting in this room right here for 56,000 people in the city of Ocala, asking them to figure out how to take care of not only our school board, but also of the county, and also of our state. And stop, you know, it would seem to me that if we play, just, you know, you show me yours, I'll show you mine kind of philosophy, of if you're going to not listen to the law, then neither are we. And we call hard, and you fill up every retention bar around here and grass them over and say, we're out of this homeowner business because we can't afford it. I mean, if you can't do it, then why should we be able to do it? And that's the message. If it's got to go, then obviously you have to sit here and wait on the judges, but you go way back to the delegation, and I hit hard on this the other day. I told them, and I pointed, and I said, Tallahassee has said, here are the rules, and we're asking you to simply tell clarify it and make people follow it. Now, obviously, they're, you know, they're not judges, but it's very, just this whole domino thing that sits here of this is real time. We're going to have this next week. We got the gas tax thing that we have to be aware of. It comes down to dollars. Your counselor can tell you this is how much money you got in the pot for stormwater. This is how much money you got in the bucket for roads and gas taxes. So if the county goes over here and says, we're going to rearrange your gas portion, those are real hard dollars. And so there's a cap on the road, we've got potholes in the road, so, you know, my bucket tax, all right, so what are we going to do? We'll start running out raising taxes. So how much? Because it's political decision. You know, it just comes to anything. I don't think it's political, it's a business decision. How much are you willing to go out there and subsidize? And I'll say it again. For a bunch of Republicans down there, we talk about, you know, making sure that we're looking out for taxpayers, and then going to the state, there's a bunch of Republicans up there who want to talk about, we're looking out for this, they want to dodge, let's push our responsibility onto somebody else, because we're over here doing good. You know, it's all, be patriotic, pal, be patriotic, just step up for the children, step up. And it's so wrong. A lot of this is going to hinge on obviously the courts and everything else, but, you know, we're going to be the next week with Tampa. We have to be prepared. You know, part of my sports analogies with Notre Dame in Alabama, we're over here thinking where it's all great, we're going to have money to fix our roads. We may not. We may run into and get clocked and say, you know what, Cal, you're on your own with roads. The courts may come back and say, Cal, you're on your own with stormwater. And then the county and the state goes, that's where we sit right back here again. And maybe it's not this year, and maybe it's not this council. Some council will simply have to say, turn around and look at the taxpayers and all these businesses and all of this model that we've got right here and say, if we've been hammered from the local level to the county level to the state level, what are we going to do? So are you going to ask? Talk about political decisions. So that's why, in my mind, it's very clear. Continue to fight for citizens of the city of Ocala. You continue to fight for the taxpayers. And the more people that are paying into the system, cheaper it is for everybody. If you start giving people out,
an exemption because it simply narrows that cash flow. It narrows that ability to go out and get it. And so that's why, you know, hopefully we, the school board can go. And that's where I like, you know, not to name, it'd be nice to take a small break down back to the courthouse and set those dominoes up for some of the judges and say, don't get stuck on the school board situation. What you're doing is asking the city of Ocala to fund all the way to Tallahassee, and you can't do it. So who knows where it goes? That's, council's going to be faced with that, depending on this decision. Hopefully, we find that act. We'd love to get an opinion that came back. We can meet with the school board, sit right here. As Pat told you, just as we're sitting right here, you know, that side of the table said, here's what we're going to do. Walked out that door. And it's been hanging on ever since. And it's just been, it's been amazing. And hopefully it'll be the best. But we have to be real, and it's almost like a secondary strategy. If that does happen, all of that's going to take a major hit. What we did, that's why it's all the more important. Fill up Mecca, fill up the airport, and you fill up all the stuff because it's just, you know, it's saving for a rainy day kind of deal, and it's storm clouds still brewing.
Yeah. If we lose the appeals process when we're presently in, and we begin the next appeals process,
and we go back to the trial board and try it.
Okay, and then try it. Okay. Is there a nest on that?
If we lost the appeal from the beginning to the end, probably still 18 months for the trial process.
Okay, so in magical terms of 2 months from now, they rule on and we lose, and it's 12 to 18 months from then would be about the time to put the
trial up.
Now, then it goes to an appeal level, right?
If you win, you know, they can appeal. If you lose, you can appeal.
This can go on for quite some time. Are you suggesting more when and if to meet with them? A conciliatory?
I really want you to understand this so that when you talk to that side of government, wherever you understand, the Florida legislature required us to do something. It gave us the power to charge utilities for it. The Florida Supreme Court then said, the legislature really meant what they said in that legislation. Local governments have to pay for stormwater utility when the legislature passed that legislation. So the Supreme Court did what I like to do when I talk about doing their own thing. The Supreme Court said what the legislature said. They didn't comment about whether it was wise or not. They just said, this is what the legislature said, and they meant it. You owe it, school board. You owe the utility fees. Then the second district court appeal, let's get back to what you do, which whatever you did in the second district court appeal. After the Supreme Court said the legislature meant what they said, you owe those utility fees, the second district court of appeal that had not agreed with the Supreme Court petition, that's why I was up at the Supreme Court in the first place. The second district court of appeal said, which is not all, the second district court of appeal said, well, yeah, you may owe it, but there's a sovereign immunity argument if you didn't have a written contract. I find that ludicrous because the Second District Court of Appeal is basically saying the Supreme Court said the legislature says they owe it. And they didn't really mean it because of this contract issue. I don't interpret that. I find that a ludicrous result. It's at odds with this legislation. It's at odds with what the Supreme Court said about the legislation. But that's where we're at. And so when you do talk to your legislative delegation, I don't be patronizing about it, but you have to understand that and tell them, we're asking you to do exactly what the Supreme Court said, which is, we really, really meant it when we passed that legislation. And the Supreme Court says, they owe it. They owe it. So we're not asking you to do anything that you haven't legislated before. We're asking you to make it clear, now I guess the second DCA has been told us, but that's what you, they owe, and they have to pay.
So that decision that was going to be said wasn't appealed?
No, because actually it was appealed because it was actually against the Department of Transportation. And they didn't appeal it because the Department of Transportation didn't move out of Gainesville, so they went in there and paid it.
So if they would have, that would have
been right at all. Yeah, it would have gone back up to Springport, but the City of Gainesville said, well, they moved out of that. kind of like this, if you find yourself talking to a state representative or a state senator, and they ask you about this, I will, one question, back to Mr. Dean, do you believe in the Florida Supreme Court, do you believe that they carry a weapon? It's all I'm just saying, as a senator or as a representative, do you believe in the Supreme Court? I'll tell you what the Supreme Court said. All right, so if you're going to take the opinion of the district, you know, Secretary of Appeals, but also the Florida Supreme Court meant, but we're really not going to follow it, then that's where these dominoes start, and that's where it's going to happen, because we're not going to listen to it, and if school board doesn't have to listen to it, and county doesn't have to listen to it, and the state doesn't have to listen to it, and the district too doesn't have to listen to the Supreme Court, what do you think?
Yeah, but we can.
Get out of this, well, yeah, we're being held captive by our executive council, but we're sitting here going through all these things and spending tax dollars and all this stuff, so it's like, and that's where the free fall is, and then we're the ones. See, but you're not caring for the children. So it's the bill that are you're not there for the children. You're not there for the children.
Let me ask a question. Isn't it, I know you talked about legislating from the bench, isn't it against the law to legislate from the bench in the Constitution?
Well, the judiciary is the third branch. The judiciary is the third branch of government, and so they're there to interpret the law, and so there is interpreting it in a way that is looser. And, you know, there's two schools of thought in this. It's strict constructions, I have one of them. And then there's the Constitution's living, breathing doc, and I don't buy into that. And it trickles down to, you know, you strictly construe legislation, you strictly construe prior court decisions. If you're not, and there's people that have a more loose view of it, and they're completely different philosophical points of view, and it's pretty much what divides conservatives, liberals, and Republicans, and Democrats becomes that. And it's not against the law. It's that they have that. They do have that. The third co-equal branch of government. They have the right to do that. I just think it's philosophically wrong.
Well, I guess the other question, Mike. You know, Daniel was saying. Back to the Supreme Court, but did the Supreme Court say that we're wrong or right, or they're on the school board side, or hadn't gotten to the Supreme Court?
The Florida Supreme Court said we're right.
We're right.
And they said the legislation that enabled municipalities to charge applied to the local governments, the other governmental entities.
Right.
And so that was the City of Gainesville case, and they litigated all the Supreme Courts. They were told they had them. So then the second case, they kind of loophole after the Supreme Court rule saying, well, you know, yeah, you may owe it, contracts, you can't sue.
That was the appeals court said that.
So, okay. Yes.
Well, I'm like Daniel, but okay. So what would happen if we turn the water off? We can't afford to continue giving any water.
We're currently enjoined by the court to turn it off.
Yeah, but what if we did?
We would be held in contempt.
But you're saying all these other people are doing all these things. They're not being held in contempt of court. Everybody has to follow the law except for, I mean, we're following the law. Nobody else has to follow the law. Supreme Court said, you know, we're right. But, you know what I'm saying? I mean, what Daniel was saying, everybody, we're being held up by our integrity.
Be careful. Don't let my anger.
No. You're right. I mean,
we're obligated to follow the court's order on injunction. I wouldn't argue otherwise. We have to work our way through the process. Hopefully, at the end of the day, the legal process will work out in our favor.
Right.
And that's what she asked you to do, Mr. Brannick, to do. And I think we're on a good path. And I think we're on the right path. I think ultimately, if we're successful, guarantee success, but I think I like our case. But in the meantime, legislatively deal with it or politically deal with it, that's the time to be conciliatory. I conciliatory is polite, nice, yes.
That's what
you know, yeah, but conciliatory meaning you're standing on our side.
No,
because I think our side is looking sound. That being said, if there's other areas where we can if they can say, okay, we'll concede to stormwater, but let's talk about bigger issues, police protection of schools, fire user fee, you know, things like that, then, and y'all are happy with that, y'all can create a win-win. I don't know what that could be, but y'all create a win-win, then, you know, right, that's what we're supposed to do.
Back to common sense. Common sense would say, we're receiving these services from you, yes, we don't have a contract, but yes, we should pay for them. And just pay for them, and let's just move on. I'm not saying that we should turn the water off, electric up. I was just asking a question of what would happen if we didn't answer the question, but, you know, they're getting something, we're providing it, you pay for it. Suppose that.
And it's interesting, if you remember that, John, that was sitting there just out of control of us. When we sat in that meeting, and we were talking about the fire figure, the word stormwater never even got mentioned. I had staff there, and John was there, but the fact that it was fire, and the number was, at the time, I've been thinking, you know, half a million, whatever, and we gave him the numbers on amount of calls for service, fire service calls, police calls, and all these things, and so we're sitting here, it's like I'm sitting here looking at Larry, looking at Jews and Eddie, looking at Paul back, and we talked about these numbers, and we even said, I said, I'm here also on behalf of council, but we would look at some type of formula that maybe you're not getting, you know, the rec rate bill on fire and police, but at least just something to let you know that I think behind the wall or something, the Marion County Public School System is a heavy user of police and fire. They just are a fire rescue, because that's school every day, period. Just, some point right now, guarantee you we've got trucks at this school, and we're doing this, you know, it's out of month for our issues, you know, for our we're doing it. And the formula was, let us just talk. And that's when it came back, and I'm told you this, let us take these numbers, let us understand them, let us digest them, we'll get back with them. Sounds good, you know, I mean, this is great. And here we sit. Just get stormwater off the table, and I'm sure we can sit just in a room like this, a table like this, where council's on one side, and stormwater's on the other side, and we can have police and fire, and we sit here and say, all right, let's get back to where this discussion was at 18 months ago, because that's why I want to meet with the school board. I don't want to get so personal, but I do want to look at Bobby James and say, Mr. James, you coached this man right here in football. If this man told you something to your face that he was going to do, and then walked out the door and only through the star banner and only through TV interviews that you heard that he was going to do exact opposite of what you do, you would be surprised. On a personal level, knowing that that element looked you in the face, lied to you, walked out and did something else. Because Bobby James and Ron Crawford and Carol Lee and Nancy Stacy and Angie Coleman were not in that meeting. They weren't there. I simply want to tell them, and I think Max has been able to make some of those inroads with that. And that's all. And if they collectively as a group want to say it's still game on, we still want to fight, I swear to God, I would feel 100% better. I just absolutely would. But it's like they don't want to face up to what was represented. Let's go over here and hug. Let's just start fighting here what we're going to do. You know, this is just, you know, this quick, disgruntled little kid, I'm going to go in the corner, and I'm just going to play around, and I'm going to mess. So that's where we can resolve the police and fire issue. Police knows how much money they spend on this. The fire knows how much money they spend on this. And we can collectively, as we start going back into this thing, the strategic plan, and understand that's where the police comes in. How much money do we want to allot? You know, where your bucket mask, you know, you start formulating those plans, but at least to get there. So hopefully we can, but I just, you know, it's very much a political philosophy for that they carry on voter registration cards the way they're legislating. And that is, we're not spreading the cost out over everybody. We're going to ask a few to pay for the man. And that's not what they're about. It's not what they go and represent themselves to the voters about. I want them to stand up for what they got elected for. I want them to stand up for their political philosophies and face it.
Pat, my question to you earlier was not
about whether we change our position. I mean, I think our position is pretty steadfast, at least in the group anyway. My question was, because of there's so many new members on their board, should we take a softer approach at the give meeting with them? Verbal softer approach, kind of tone down and rhetoric and try to get something accomplished to be professional.
Can you have a meeting and not tell me where it's at when?
Yes.
No. Well, I think we have 2 minutes.
Emphasize that. They do not know what happened. Not only the new school board members, Nancy and Carol, but Bobby James, who's a sitting board member, did not know if I explained to him our perspective. So you're dead on, Pat. They do not know, not only the existing, but the new school members coming on.
Pat, is there any scenario that we could give them a notice that we're not going to provide services to them at X date out unless we get a written contract, or we just... Is there any scenario that we could force them to give us a contract that you can envision?
We're actually going to amend the complaint. I don't know how to discuss that with you, but I've got some thoughts on any complaint to deal with issues like that if we don't get past this appellate stuff. So the complaint we'll be going forward on will probably be a little bit different than where we're currently postured. But I haven't spent a lot of time to ask on it because, you know, let's see what happens to the appeal and not to spend on appeals. Yeah, there are some things we can pursue along that route. We have told them not to provide stormwater where you can. There's only two or three locations right now. Yeah. It wouldn't actually turn off the downspouts or something, but
it's very minimal.
Very minimal. Because, you know, most of us have large conveyance systems to a drain retention area. You barely can't plug it up. Place where we would do no harm to anybody else but them.
What happens if they come in and put in their own drainage extension areas on their own school property?
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, they'll do that when pigs fly.
Well, I mean, at some point,
it's cost prohibitive. Well, exactly. You start getting into the economics of it. They won't do it. I'll find a little school bigger or almost, and then all of a sudden they're going to get a school board in the meeting and staff comes to them and says, you know, we need $5 million to go do a bunch of holes. We could put on this for $10,000 a month. And maybe they'll do it some places like Vanguard, which they already do. It's free Costello to get it. But a lot of places, much less they could put it, would be where the portals are now or the playgrounds, right? The sports. So know, it'd be that to acquire our adjoining property.
Well, in the case of Osceola, we did fix, you know, that street right by Osceola. We spent about $60,000 on a change order, ripped the street up during the summer, installed that. Well, I asked Jane Elsworth about it when I first got on council. She said, no, it can't be done. We've tried it. It won't work. And then I asked John, you know, you see it flooding all the time. I said, can I see if we can fix that? And Bruce Phillips, to his credit, he goes, yeah, exactly. And now we can do it. We can do a change order on this, make it part of this job. And they did it, and it works, and it doesn't flood there anymore.
So, that, you know, that's stuff they need to know. I mean, it's dovetails. Cindy was there. We asked the same volley, was on the stand at the hearing, and, you know, he said they said there was flooding at one of the elementary
schools. Fort House.
And I asked him, I said, would you like us to come and, you know, fix that so it doesn't happen anymore? And he goes, well, yeah. I said, well, even though you're not paying for it. And it's like, you know, really think about it that way.
Yeah, I mean, we paid $60,000 to fix that problem.
But anecdotal stuff, like, we, on our own volition, without charging, we saw a problem. We went through that. Once you did, you're in the operating utility. You find a spot of problems, you try to go fix it, and invest in the budget. You know, we're perfectly willing to do the same thing at Ward Island, I presume. You know, if that's a problem, we're going to deal with it. It's our utility. We're going to deal with it. We're going to be a good operator. You've got all these probable projects. But, you know, you can't have both ways.
Right. Well, just anecdotally, there was also a city of Montclair where the federal government has tried to stop handing it home around the Port of Washington.
Yeah, so.
And the court ordered them to pay it.
Plus, the south part of the stormwater really is flooding control and clean water.
Right.
So those are the two main functions.
Well, here's the irony of the federal government. They're the ones who are establishing all these point source pollution rules. They're the ones who are driving the cost.
Well, and there was a Virginia judge the other day that ruled that the EPA had no authority over stormwater runoff and stopped them from doing that. It's a state of, I think, no, the county there, $300 million and whatever the city was, it can really, you know, that appealed it.
Because of the potential domino effect of the ruling of the appellate court, is there any benefit of a strategy in terms of postponing that ruling, that decision, A, for council to see if they can get together with the new school board, and B, more importantly, maybe B, if that's not successful, giving us another year to work on the legislative side and see if we get the legislature to get more, other cities get more proactive in this issue?
All I would do that would be to crawl the appeal, which I would recommend.
That's the only way to do that.
Okay. Yeah, because, yeah, like Mark said, that'd be terrible if we got ready to meet and they, you know, ruled against us and it's like, okay, well, never mind. Yeah, maybe put that on hold, meet with them, and then.
They rule against us to the preliminary stage. And I, you know, I know that lawyers, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but I won't tell you why they do it that way, but it's a long explanation. But you really are procedurally, have nothing to do with facts. Procedurally, you have a different battle, preliminary injunction stage. The file's not complete, and you would end up with a process. And so if you lose, I mean, it may be that you lost only because, not because of legal arguments, but facts, only because at this stage, preliminary injunction trial.
I was just thinking it would be difficult to have a conversation across the technical school board if that decision came out, you know, before that, and then we were ruled against.
Pat, is there a scenario that you could lose, but the language could be inserted within the document by the judges? You guys need to figure this out because if it comes back to us in the final stage, our decisions may be different.
They can do a ruling called PCA as a procuring firm, and they just say, we're a firm to drop judge. They don't tell you why. Sometimes they do that. PCA, you don't know why. And sometimes they do an opinion. They're not obligated to give you a legal opinion. But with a, let's say the PCA, or they gave it a rule of favor to the school board on budget issues, but they wrote an opinion, they're making language in the opinion that's sort of the appellate court saying, look out, you know, this comes back to us, you may not have the same point of view, so, you know, that's their way of saying, on the resolve, they can do something. I mean, they could write an opinion that we agree with the arguments of the city of Cali here, their injunction, but because it's a preliminary stage, we're not going to enter an injunction now, or send it back to court, or even to expedite a final trial on this matter, so that the parties, if they don't like the result, you know, appeal it or the final appeal. And that's, you know, that's sending a message. You know, they said they may say we rule against my own business. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for being here.
Appreciate it.
We'll turn the time back over to City Council to discuss any matters we choose to do so at this time.
Well, it's been an eventful day and a half. I think we've accomplished a lot, but I mean, there's just a lot that's going to happen over the next 60 days, which would be, you know, the pension, again, the pension issue that will come in 2 weeks, the fire impasse that will come sometime in March, and also hopefully a decision on, you know, from the appellate court on the school board, which will then we'll have to address. So you got three major issues that are going to very much affect what we've done up here, one way or another.
Yeah, and then we'll add one more to that, and our road tax meeting that we got next week. Again, my apologies for the analogies, but, you know, it's a kickoff, and we're all excited because everybody in the country told us another thing that we're going to win the semester championship, and then all of a sudden we have a pension meeting and a fire meeting and a road tax meeting and a school board appellate, and all of a sudden it's halftime, it's 28-0. It's like, dear God, we're going to ask you, you know, what are we going to do? So, they are some critical decisions that are going to go down. So as we leave here with this excitement, this strategic plan, and we've got all these goals, we're still being aware that we have opponents. And it would be great if we could all get along in harmony. It would be great and fantastic. And we want to. We sit here and we want, you know, we want to work for the school board. We want to work for the county. You know, there's no doubt. I'll, you know, I can say that. Amidst all my excitement and fervor and passion and everything else, that is the goal, because a healthy Ocala, a healthy Dunellen, a healthy Dole, a healthy Reddick, a healthy McIntosh means a healthy Marion County. Okay? So let's look at that. Ocala's excited about itself. You can get Bellevue in here and get the mayor here from Bellevue. You can get the council from over Dunellen. You think they're any different than us? They're excited about Dunellen. They love Dunellen. They love Bellevue. They love all of that. And yet, they have this interest here over here in Marion County. Except they don't have a city. They want one. They're trying to figure out which one they can take. And if they can't take one, then they're going to build one. What's it going to be called? Marion County, Marion County? What are you going to call it? Can't we go out to the city of Marion County?
Empty.
Yeah. Empty. I mean, that's what they're trying to build. So you would hope you could change their philosophy. Drive them up to 30,000 love, that's 100,000 love. We have a vibrant Ocala. We have a vibrant Bellevue. Look at this great vibrancy that we have that is Marion County. Let them tout themselves and go. They're down in the weeds. That's my opinion. They're down in the weeds because they want to create something too for themselves that we have, that Bellevue has with them. So we take this plan and as we move forward, and then council move forward, yes. A few weeks we got attention. That's going to be challenged by our own. Okay? Don't think cat food seed's coming up and you're going to challenge every bit of it. It will happen. The linemen are going to come up and tell you, you know, I'll quit tomorrow and I'll just go to CECO. But remember the comment that got made was there were 200 applications and they only hired two. Okay? So while some may run, don't run back real quick. Okay? And so we've got to maintain that. The fire thing. I've said 31, I can't accept 31, I'm sure I said 2005, 2006, I don't know, I know we said to a fire impasse somewhere, back around 05.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you, it's dramatic. Okay, it is very dramatic. It's very, the room's packed. Kids come in, they had balloons, if you remember, tied on the kids and broke them off the front, and you know, some children up there, you know, help my daddy and all this kind of stuff. It's going to be dramatic. Road tax, and then, you know, who knows, this whole thing may go on for another year. We don't know. But I think we have to keep some sort of little caveat out here, you know, game plan number two, or at least other strategies. And that's where, as y'all, as council leaves here today, and then staff, y'all take over, that there has to be a couple of, there's got to be some time set for some what ifs. You know, what if this doesn't go everything the way we want? Because the road tax is a huge one. We could be sitting here next year, or whatever kind of council on county come and say, well, county readjusted the gas tax, and now we're $2.5-3 million short of what we were last year. So, council, you pick which, here's a bucket, here's $20 in it, which road do you want to fix? Okay? Because last year we had $80 in it, now this year we got $20. So, y'all tell us which road you want to fix, and it'll be a whole different type of strategic plan, a whole different type of it. It really, and just tell them to turn into Winter Park, and it'll be a, you're just a bump on it. So, I would hope that Ocala stays strong, you know, and that we on the outcome of the call, just like we do, and just be prepared. Jay said, we're going to get in the next 60, probably 920 days. This will be challenged interim, and it will be challenged externally. Do we believe in it? Do we not believe in it? And move forward. So, with that, I'll shut up. Just let me know when the school board meeting is not. Actually, probably if you could keep me and Ron Crawford out of there, y'all be a lot more productive. So he and I can scrap out the park.
What?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'll just broadly, sort of my vision, which is always been the same, which is people, no matter what they're doing, what business they're doing, whether they're driving for it, whether they're coming to their business, whether they're on the internet, whether they're wherever they are, they know they've been at Ocala. So if that means improving gateways, we know we've exited Darien County and we've been at Ocala. And how do we make that difference? And, you know, it's different because of the way we moved away from this. It's different because of the way that the police officers are acting. It's different because of the way it looks. It's different. We know we've entered somewhere that's special for whatever reason. And so, yeah, and how do we do that? We've got the resources to create those things and to make that difference. So to me, that is seen as the overarching goal, is that it's special, it's different. You know, we want you to come, find your place. Here we are.
I'd like to echo everything Susie said, and as we work through the strategic plan to become the economic hub, you know, not just this area, ourselves. And I think if we follow the plan, we stick to our guns, you know, concerning pension reform, it's not going to be pretty. I think everyone in this room understands that. But there has to be pension reform. We know that. We also know that the citizens are going to demand pension reform. And ultimately, that's going to work. So, you know, although it's going to be tough, there'll be decisions made. And probably out of the five of us, there'll be different ideas of how you fix that. But ultimately, we'll come to a decision and make it happen. Again, good strategic plan, good 2 days. And I think it seems like to me, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like to me that staff has already begun to do just about everything we talked about. We're just continuing on from last year and becoming better. So, to that, actually, Matt, job well done to you and your staff.
On behalf of the staff, thank you.
Yeah, and just let me, you know, everybody brought up a lot of good comments, but to you, and you've done a great job. This is very, very productive time. Glad we got rid of the dots. They should have been here when we had the dots too. But it's just, we need to create, and I think you're creating it, Matt, the environment where, everybody's got a role to play for employees to understand. Everybody's got a role to play. What each and every employee does is extremely important. They need to feel that way and feel like they can take a chance, do things, not worry about making a mistake, and go out and just pure common sense. But we can fix it, if you make a mistake, and treat the public with respect. And I think all those other things will happen. The big picture, I think that's what we need. I think you're actually doing it, like John said, that you're doing a lot of the things you've already talked about.
Just members of the board, again, to appreciate your time. I had met you before. This becomes too big, and you're carrying this out. But as we sit here, we've met, and then you're getting senior staff. I think it seemed to me, as we go throughout the year, that from time to time, Dave gets to come in. It's not just the council meeting in this atmosphere. It's not just the senior management meeting. It's the next level where you end up in a meeting with this plan in front of the guys who are the stormwater guys and the employees, vehicle reports, wherever. Just the objective, sitting in the corner, watching the dynamics and everything that it goes. Again, so it's key is to sit here and return again a year later, just like we did. And what's the report card? We said this, we went down through this year, get there, did not get there, from a measure standpoint, but I appreciate that. It's great that you got to set up here for 2 days, and hopefully we can just keep it rolling.
Anything else from council members? If not, we will conclude the strategic planning session for 2013. Lori's outside. She has lunch for you. So feel free to partake and let you know. I appreciate your input. I know my staff appreciates your input. We are going to remain here this afternoon to try to operationalize, develop those report cards, and work very hard at seeing this plan through. And so my appreciation on behalf of staff, thank you for giving us your marching orders and understanding of where you're coming from. It's going to help us out immensely as we try to operate like this. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
you're going to
have lunch, or you can get
6 hours? No, y'all got lunch. They got a room for the rest of the day.